Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our next Big Brother Australia podcast. Or is it Australian Big Brother? I'm not entirely sure. I'm your host, Aaron Armstrong, and with me this week is a new guest. His name is Andrew. How you doing, Andrew?
Oh, I'm doing very well, thank you. Hello from the future. It's Wednesday over here. So, how are things in the past?
Yes, Andrew is a bona fide Australian himself.
Yeah, I'm Australian, I'm Asian, and I'm queer, which means that I can talk about all the different things on this interesting season. So,
you're qualified for everything in this podcast.
Yeah, like the triple threat.
There you go. So we are here. We're going to talk about the second week. I think they're weeks, right? Every three episodes amounts to about a week.
Yeah, this is week two.
Yes. So the second week of Australian Big Brother, I also think it's like technically season, what, 12?
12, reboot one, whatever you call it.
Yeah. Yeah. We're here. We're going to talk about it. And really, this week was all about Angela.
It's
truly, I was going to say, I just watched the last of the episodes. I was like, wow, it really was the rise and fall of Angela, but I don't think so. I think it was just the rise and she will continue to rise of Angela.
All hail on you, Supreme.
Yes. I was like, cause we recorded about last week and I was like, I don't know, guys, I really like Angela. I don't know if she's popular or not, but I really like her. And I was like, I'm so glad I got on that train because,
I mean,
that really paid off.
What's not wrong with Angela? Am I right?
Yeah. All right. So let's get into it here. I will say, I think overall, second week was better than the first week, but I still am having some issues overall with Australian Big Brother.
I agree, Taryn. I think it's like it's figuring out its growing pains. Like you said last week, I think there are some issues with it. It's trying to haul like half ass two things instead of haul assing one thing. And I think it hasn't quite like figured out what it's supposed to do, but fingers crossed.
Yeah. And I really, I felt like, okay, after three episodes, I know like five of the people. Surely by the time I podcast about the second week, I'll have a better understanding of who, nope, it's still like the same five people. I still haven't heard from anybody other than Angela, Kieran, Ian, or, Dan, pretty much.
Welcome to Australian Survivor. Welcome to what Shannon Gus's life is like. It's like, who's she? Who's that one?
Yeah, I Garth has entered the picture a little bit here.
Yeah.
Sophie and Chad became a thing. Xavier continues to stand out by how little he stands out. Matt continues to just be a guy that's there. I don't think he's gotten a single confessional. I can't think of a single time that he was in the diary room.
I think he was in the like DL like maybe once in like three episodes, and I'm like, oh wow, hi, I remember you.
I don't think Hannah's touched the diary room since she got mauled by Talia.
Hannah's thing is that like I survived Talia. Please, like it's like that scene from Mean Girls. Please raise your hand if you've been personally victimized by Talia George.
Yeah. But really, in my opinion, this as prominent as Angela was, it seems like it continues to be the Kieran show, because he is it's literally like this is Kieran. It feels like it's just Kieran's story. I mean, I think that'll change now that Angela's in the bunker, but and because maybe we'll shift a little more. Like, obviously, those are the two main characters right now, Kieran and Angela. But I think the main difference here is that Angela is like very central to the storyline right now, whereas Kieran is barely essential to the storyline in most episodes, except for the one where he made up the lie about Danny. But otherwise, he's been just kind of there, and yet like the most prominent character.
It's like the Survivor Australia season one syndrome of if you feel even remotely strategic, like Kieran is like basically doing like some of the least offensive things strategically speaking, and the rest of these people are like, how dare you? How dare you talk to me about this right in front of my salad? How dare you, sir? And it's like, poor Kieran's like, oh no.
Yeah, and like they're like, oh man, so devious, so smart, this Kieran. But it's this like very basic level of I guess they're learning the ropes, I guess. Okay, so our first episode of the week,
the best episode we had.
Yes, I will agree on that one. I believe this is the one with the fears, correct?
Yes, the fall of Talia.
They can blend a little sometimes, but this is the one where they go in the gingerbread house, but it was called the ginger dread house. Which was like, okay, that's, you know, Big Brother, they like to do silly things. I can see that Big Brother Australia is following suit here. But the thing for me was, I believe it was Sophie. They were like, the ginger dread house. And then Sophie was like, oh, as soon as I heard ginger dread house, I knew it was going to be so terrible. I was terrified. Like, they haven't told you what it is yet. You hear ginger dread house and that's terrified you? No. You're obviously terrified because then they told you that you're going to have to confront your phobia. Not because of the name.
I mean, she's Australian. She's from the future. She just has a way of knowing things.
She knows already. Yeah.
Time zones work differently from people like her and Rennie Martin. It's like all the information just comes in. It just knows things, you know? Sophie.
Yes. And it feels like Big Brother Australia so far, the main... There's two main plot lines. One is the game that's happening, and the other one is the food situation, and it often feels like the food situation is actually more important than the game, and so this you know phobia competition is going to sort of tie into some food stuff, right?
Yes, it's I think it says a lot about how much strategy some of these people are thinking, that the food is like the most important thing to them, and they're just like freaking out about how Garth is saying, I'm wasting away. And the first thought that pops in my head is, so like, if this is you wasting away, I wonder how you're going to react when you hear about Kelly Wentworth like losing half of her body weight in Cambodia. It's like,
yeah,
wasting away.
Exactly. Like, these people are more desperate for food than people on Survivor. It's remarkable.
It's like, on Big Brother, it's like, oh my god, I didn't get, like, my Vegemite and my toast and my butter. I'm gonna die. I'm literally dying. Meanwhile, on Survivor, they're like, oh, Jatia tossed out all the rice. I have one teaspoon for, like, 39 days.
Correct me if I'm wrong, too. This is not the only, like, they're not talking about we need money for the only food we get. They're talking about we need money for the extras. They live on basic ration. They already have as much food as they need. They're just talking about the good stuff on top of it.
Yes, they have pantry items. It's not like, they're basically like, it's kind of like how, you know how on every, like, US season, there's always one person who, like, has a meltdown over slop? Imagine a whole house of those meltdowns. They're like, oh no, I have to eat one thing now. This is the worst thing in the world.
But it's not even just like one. It's not like it's PB&J only, right? They just have like an assortment of basic foods that are too basic for them, I guess.
Oh, well, to be fair, it doesn't include tea. So, like, you know.
Which very true. I mean, some would argue that is a basic ration.
It's a human right. Like, Angela's human rights are being abrogated when people forget about the chief.
So they have to go into the Ginger Dread House and confront their fear, their phobia. And my first thought was, who in their right mind in the casting process tells production their actual phobia, right?
I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking that, okay, so if I ever do this show, I'm totally just going to say I have an irrational fear of chocolate. Like, I am so scared of chocolate. Put me in a room of chocolate and I'm going to get hives, considering how random some of these other fears were.
Exactly, right? And my thought was, I'm terrified of bubble baths. Yep, bubbles. So scared of them. And we saw that.
It's going to suffocate her. Oh, my God.
That was so. So let's just skip. That was Danny, right? That Danny is going to go in. She's already talking. Oh, yeah. Just so scared of. And it kind of sounds reasonable when she's talking about it in the house where she's like, oh, you know, I'm scared of like it suffocating me in a bath. You know, like you can kind of understand that. But then she walks into the room. And it's just a bunch of bubbles. It's not even like at her face. It's like half the room is just bubbles. And she's like so terrified. She's shaking all over the place. And I just couldn't. I'm usually the person like, you know what? Go ahead. You know, if that's what you're afraid of, I will not judge. But I got to call BS on this one. I don't think this is real.
Oh, I am the opposite. I believe it's 100% real because there was like one shot of Xavier saying, how do people have all these irrational fears? And I really think this is a house full of like genuinely like bizarre people. And like, so when Danny enters the Ginger Dread House and sees all the bubbles, she doesn't even want to turn around. You know how at the end of the Blair Witch Project, there's that guy who's like staring into like the corner, like, cause, and right before like the big like kill happens, it's like, she's just looking at the corner, trembling like a leaf. And I'm like, oh God, she's genuinely petrified by bubbles. Where did they find this woman? Like, I haven't found anyone cry this much since like Sabrina on like Big Brother Canada 2 about her dog. It's like, how could you? So funny.
I just couldn't buy the Danny one. I just couldn't. Like, I think some of them, like when Daniel goes in there, I believed Daniel's. And I even believed Sarah's to a degree, the niece, because that was pretty gross. I think Casey's was cheese grating, which, like, I get it that, like, there's... You know, maybe you're worried about like slicing yourself or grating your own fingers. Maybe, I don't know. I can see why that might be a little scary, but like actually having to do some cheese grating, I doubt she was like overly, you know, that's probably why they didn't show the whole thing. But the Danny bubble, they were like, just put some on your mouth, Danny. And she's like, she just put it. Oh, come on. Come on. This was not the whole room bubbling over onto your face. That could be scary, but taking a handful of bubbles and putting them on your mouth. Come on. This is not real.
I mean, I don't know how she's going to be able to take showers or baths, or is she just like an unhygienic person or something?
Like, she never wash her face.
Oh my God. Like maybe like this is just like, she's like terrified of like, just like makeup removers and cleansers and shampoos. It's like, oh no, I'm having a breakdown every time I go to the Bath and Body Works section of a supermarket.
Mm. Yeah. So that one was a bit off to me, but the Sarah's the first one that goes in. She is confronted with knees. There's four knees in a knee shaped hole in the wall. And she has to rub moisturizer onto them, which, I felt again, like, you're skirting the line here, Big Brother Australia, in terms of like personal contact. I don't know if people should be forced to, touch other people's knees.
I mean, it's the bee's knees, right? What I loved in like the beginning, so before we even see what's inside the Ginger Dread House with Sarah, she has this hilarious DR where she says, yeah, I might be scared of spiders, I might be scared of snakes, but the only thing I have a phobia of is cut to knees. And I was thinking, Finn, internationals watching this show must have such a skewed perception of a snake. It's like, yeah, spiders and snakes are fine, but like kneecaps, oh no. Like that's what scares Australians, am I right?
Sorry. You know, if I walked into a room and there were four knees poking out of the wall like that, I would be a little scared.
I mean, break a leg, I guess.
I'd be like, what is going on? There are cameras rolling. I don't know what they expect of me here, but I'm not into this kinky nonsense.
It's not what you wanted, but what you needed.
Okay.
I was channeling my best Liana Bars.
Oh man. All right. So, we also got, Angela with, and this is so like, Angela was, she couldn't even get up to the door. She kept like, no. And I was like, watch it be like a kitten in there. And then she goes in and it's a little dog.
Jackson, the poodle. Jackson, also known as Mickey, the poodle.
like Jackson himself, ended up being terrifying. this one makes a little sense. Obviously, she says that where she's from, that there are, you know, sort of like feral dogs that attack people. And so, you know, having a fear of dogs, kind of rational in that sense. Having a fear of like a harmless little poodle in front of you, less so.
I love her justification for why she's scared of dogs. She's saying, it's the fear of the unknown, you know. They don't speak English.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's like, it kind of reminded me of April Lewis in Big Brother 6 when she said, my dog Pepperoni's not here to defend himself. Like, how could you, like, say that? It's like, are we living in a Pixar movie? Do dogs speak English now? Or some, like, human
I like the idea of her, if the dog had spoken English, that like, okay, now it's fine because we can negotiate.
Oh, yeah, like negotiate like Angelina did for the rice. It's like, oh, yeah. So if you don't move this way, I will not scream and cry. Do we have an agreement?
She tried anyway.
You know, like maybe, you know, if Jackson the poodle would have given Angela a jacket or something. Angela, Angelina, they're both queens. They both are television icons who know how to monopolize airtime. It's a trend. Nice.
There you go. We also got Daniel going in terrified. With the Big Brother has a long history, at least in the U.S., of people being afraid of birds. And so this felt very appropriate that Daniel went in. And this one was the one I enjoyed the most because it really, like, he was freaking out at appropriate moments, too. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm terrified to be in a room with birds. It was, oh my God, I heard something. Oh, no, it's going to be flapping and bite me.
Very like losing Hitchcock, it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like something very Hitchcockian. I have a question for you, Taryn. What do you think is like the more hilarious bird related fear? Dan's fear of pigeons or Nicole's fear of chickens?
I mean, this was pretty funny to me. I really liked seeing this gigantic man cower in terror in a corner from little pigeons.
Oh, look over there. It's Grandpa Lou.
Oh, boy.
But about the birds thing, it's what I liked about before Dan went in. Ian is like, he's acting like he says, just stay calm and relaxed, don't make sudden movements. Like, he's treating this like the pigeons are like a crocodile. It's like, and I'm thinking, they're just pigeons. I live in Sydney. I know Dan, like, has spent time in a major Australian city. There are pigeons everywhere.
It's like, he lives in fear.
Fear and dread.
Constantly.
He lives in the Ginger Dread House. It's a waking
house. Yes, the Ginger Dread House of his mind.
Like, yeah. Oh, it's like, I mean, I loved how also the editing for this entire sequence, I think the producers were having a lot of fun with it. Like, for Sarah's, for example, the producers would say, cue the knees, and then the announcer voice would say, Sarah's fear is technically known as genuphobia. Like, we're in a documentary. And we're like, We're like, oh, it's like, oh, suddenly we're on the TLC network and it's like My Strange Addiction or something.
Yeah. You learn something. It's an educational program.
Educational programming or like, what else did I write in my notes? One thing I wrote in my notes is Sophie's fear is the only one that seems reasonable. It's like, hers was the snake. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it was like in between Casey's fear of like shredding cheese. And for Americans who don't know what type of cheese that is, it's called Vega. It's like a really cheap, like low brand cheese that kind of smells a little bit. And some people don't like it because it's like both crumbly, but not really melt, like melty in a good way. But the fact that she was like saying, oh, how could you? Like, I told you this in confidence. And like, and it's like, she was so mad the entire time. And like, so the fact that Sophie's fear of snakes was between Casey's fear of shredding cheese and Garth's fear of scaling a fish. It was like, it was like, oh, so we have a normal person here sandwiched between, it's like,
right. Somebody who wasn't clever enough to game the system and put in a phobia that's not that bad.
And they were making them do weird like things while sitting in the room with the fear. Like Sophie had to eat popcorn for some reason while she's next to like this like gorgeous yellow snake. It's like, who? I want to be in the room when the producers brainstorm these things of like, it's like Mad Libs. It's like, okay, so when they're in the room with the snake, do we make them eat the popcorn or eat the ice cream? I don't know. What do we do? And I personally think that the choice of item that Daniel had to eat while he was in there, it is a very like subtle but clever joke that only Australians would get. So what do you think he was eating? Like the ice cream?
I just looks like some sort of ice cream bar thing.
Well, as your resident Australian, I'm here to tell you that that particular brand of ice cream is called, and I'm not making this up, a Golden Gay Time.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. You know that some producer was saying, oh, it's going to be so funny making him eat a Golden Gay Time while these pigeons are looking at it.
Well, I thought the popcorn would be more appropriate for the pigeons because the pigeons might want some of the popcorn.
Let's not try to understand the madness. It's a good
right. That's just too risky.
Soon, before you know it, you'll be scaling a fish and like having like a freak out. Like
yeah. So they all succeed. Nobody fails here. And they get their food or whatever it was. And so everybody's happy. Angela has her tea. And everything's going to be okay. We're then going to get into one of the few segments on the show that doesn't have to do with one of the big four. The big four meaning Angela, Kieran, Daniel, or Ian. And that's going to be about Chad and Sophie and how there is a blooming romance here, it seems.
I have many thoughts about Chad and Sophie that we'll kind of pepper in while we go in chronologically. I'll preface this by giving you my hot take. I think one of the two of them is the winner. And like from like a winner's edit perspective. And I like we can talk about it while we go through, but it's not a coincidence that Chad and Sophie would like, if you think about it, they're like being peppered in just enough so you remember, oh, those two are there. And they're always edited in a way where they never seem negatively edited compared to someone like Talia or Dan, who they are working with. Like, let's be clear. Chad and Sophie are working with Dan and Talia. Like, Sophie and the deals that she was trying to make, I think makes that quite, like, clear. But the fact that Talia gets edited, say, in a less sympathetic manner, and the editors are doing an interesting thing, I think, protecting Chad and Sophie, I think one or both of them might be in the final three. We have it's unprecedented. We're talking about edgic for Big Brother.
Right?
I think we have to, though.
Well, I think that's an interesting take because obviously, you know, not only has Big Brother not had edgic before, where they know the final people at least ahead of time, but this is also a totally new production crew. I know that there are some people from Australian Survivor that are working on this show, but I don't think that necessarily they're going to be doing the exact same thing in terms of editing as Australian Survivor, and so it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Now, I've seen some of the Australian Survivor seasons, and I think that the editing is, while more similar to Australian Survivor than US Big Brother, still not the same as Australian Survivor. Australian Survivor, one of the things I love about Australian Survivor is the, is how much you like really get to know a decent amount of the people, at least. There are usually like a few that are just completely left off the table. But it really feels like there's a full cast of characters, or at least that's what was my impression. Whereas this one, it really feels like there are stars and there are the extras. and that seems like it's what they're doing. And so from my perspective, it really feels like it would be strange if after six episodes, one of Angela, Ian, Kieran, or Daniel is not in the end, or, you know, the person that they're pushing to be the winner. But it could certainly be possible because it's so obvious. You almost kind of hope it wouldn't be. So the sort of Chad, Sophie theory is interesting to me.
Also, what's interesting for the Chad and Sophie is that they arrived later. So they weren't in the premiere. Mm. They were technically, like, I think episode two. Yeah, they were both episode two people. So it's what I've been, I've, like in my notes, for example, before the Ginger Dreadhouse, we had like, we had not only had one Chad and Sophie sequence, we had like one before the Ginger Dreadhouse, and then we had another one afterwards. And it's, I think it's what's interesting to me is less so about, okay, I agree with you, the big four are getting more airtime than Chad and Sophie, but like, being the super fan that I am, I paid attention to how they're editing things in a certain way and who's being protected. Chad and Sophie are being protected, whereby a lot of the time, like that big group of people, Zoe, Dan, Matt, Casey, Talia, when she was there, they'd be all be laughing, and that we'd cut to like, you know, shots of like, say, Dan, like going, ha 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 ha. Chad and Sophie also happened to be there physically, but the editors would like deliberately not cut to them, even though we can see in group shots they're there and they're laughing. And it just, it's very interesting to me of, it's less so who's getting the largest amount of airtime, but rather who's being protected. For example, in Survivor 39, Tommy was like nowhere to be seen during the whole Kelly Kim drama because the editors knew, okay, we have to shield like certain people from like certain like actions. And Chad and Sophie, I think when you look at Twitter, for example, you're going to find a lot of people who are saying, say, hate on Kieran, or even some people are hating on Angela because they don't have taste, I guess. And some terrible people have terrible taste. They have no quality to their taste. Or some people who are hating on Dan or Ian. Like even Ian has like a few like detractors. Chad and Sophie, everyone's like very like neutral, leaning positive on. And I think that's like where my, you know, I'm going to put my flag in of Chad and Sophie. One of them is like going to make an impact on the season theory, and that they are being shielded.
I think that's fair. I also did get the sense that Ian was being protected. I think we'll talk about that when we get to the third episode in particular. Yes, definitely interesting. All right. So,
Before we go on, because I mentioned the first Chad and Sophie segment, correct? Before the Ginger House. Another reason why I said potential winners at Sophie is that Sophie got a whole like section about how she literally says, so the Big Brother says, please explain hot damn to Big Brother, which is a very odd sentence. And then Sophie says, it's annoying, but because I'm not here to flirt or fraternize with the enemy, I'm here to win. If that's not a winner's headed quote, I don't know what it is. Because then we go through like the 4-minute montage where we get her like package. And the Australian Survivor sometimes does this where they have like the pre-packaged like video packages, and they'll like sometimes like show them. And I think it was very interesting that Sophie's package is like a like transition was like her literally saying, I'm here to win. Like I noticed, like for example, Pierre Miranda had like the very famous, if I'm not voted at first, like I'm either going to be first out or I'll win the whole thing. David Gannat in like the last season had like something similar before his like big package. He said like, oh, I'm not like here to like play fools or something like that. Australian Survivor does this is that like they will always be like an interesting transition quote, and I just found it so odd that Sophie's thing was, I have a showman's, but I'm here to play to win. Like the editors were like there to like emphasize it, and that okay, she's not just like a pretty face, because they could have easily cut that out, you know what I mean? Like they didn't need to include that line, so
yes. That's definitely possible. I think it's also possible that it just plays into the fact that they want to show the romance.
Yeah.
And that definitely is like a comment on the romance. And there's a lot of like talk of like her hesitancy. And I feel like we got somewhat similar things with Talia and Daniel at the start of the season before it soured. Going as far as the woman in the diary room, I just don't know if he likes me yet. And Big Brother being like, you should talk to him. And like, okay, I guess so. Would you tell him to talk to me? We finally see them come together late at night. That they're gonna, you know, I guess have a little makeout session where her leg is like off the bed. I wasn't sure what was happening there.
It was like awkward, like snuggle, but kind of not really because there wasn't enough space in the bed because it's a single. It's like, oh, so I'm gonna kind of like you dangle on the side there.
Yeah, like her bottom half was saying, get me out of here, but her top half was like nice and snug and comfy. So I was like, body language is saying different things right now.
It was
now
very like Cirque du Soleil. It was like, oh, it's like, you're contortioning there. There's no space there. Is that comfortable? I have no idea.
Yeah. So you were telling me earlier that they are very much against anything too raunchy on the show.
Yeah.
That they would like to keep this as family friendly as possible.
Keyword. That's the keyword. The term family friendly. This is the Channel 7. They knew that Channel 10 went under, as some people know, Channel 10, which operates Australian Survivor. They were, I think, purchased by actually CBS. And due to like a few rumblings, Seven, I think, they're very like cautious right now. And they really want this to like succeed and work out. And because Big Brother Australia has had a few controversies, the producers have made it very clear, apparently, that this is a family-friendly show. And apparently there is like a no canoodling rule that has been told to all the house guests. Which is why they even have like the single beds, and it's even apparently rumored to be in their contracts that if you canoodle, you'll be evicted, which is like so like draconian.
This was too hot to handle before too hot to handle.
They're coming from the future. I'm telling you, Australians, we know what's going on.
I don't know. Maybe they did film this after. Who knows? But yeah, that was interesting to me. I guess it's sort of like, you know, in Big Brother Canada, they were on Slice at first, and then they moved to Global. And when they moved to Global, they had to like cut the feeds more often. They had to be more family friendly. So I think I'm getting a similar vibe here.
That's actually a perfect analogy. It's similar. It's exactly that. In that we went from 10 to 9, and now we're at 7. Big Brother Australia has been rebooted not once, but twice. And every single time, the new execs are like, oh boy, we better be careful. Because, for example, in one of the Big Brother Australia incidents, there was a national headline-breaking incident called the Turkey Slap, which I won't describe. But because between that and in Big Brother UK, where there was an incident involving a Indian actress who was bullied, which prompted threats of sanctions from India. Between those two incidents, Big Brother UK / Big Brother Australia has accumulated quite the reputation for controversy, which is why these producers are saying, we will have pigeons and cheese grating, and that is it. We are not doing anything freaky today, sir.
Well, I think it kind of illuminates a little bit for me the decision on the format. You know, I think that for a lot of the North American Big Brother fans who like the North American format of strategy and voting each other out, they saw the move in Big Brother Australia to switch to something similar as, oh, they want to do something like we like, where there's strategy involved and people vote each other out. They want to move in that direction. But I think maybe it actually wasn't that. I think that perhaps what's going on here is that they're doing the strategy stuff out of necessity. And that the real intention was, we can't have live feeds because that's too dangerous. The controversies are too likely to stem up from that. That we would like to have full control over the edit and over what goes out. And if that's the case, then we can't have this airing live. We probably don't have the infrastructure to like put out edit edited shows in the way that we want to and on a live basis, let's pre-record everything so that we have full control over everything that happens and everything that comes out. But if we do that, we can't have the audience vote anymore because we have to pre-tape it. They're not watching it live. So if that's the case, then I guess we'll have to do some kind of vote each other out business, but we'll just kind of sweep that aside and focus on what we want to focus on. And the voting each other out is just because we're pre-recording it and there's no other way to do it until we get to the finale. And then we'll do the real thing, which we want to do, which was let the audience vote on the winner.
You are so bang on the money there. Is that like if I could like just take everything you just said for the past minute and put it like on a throw pillow, like every time someone asks me why is like, do we have this hybrid format? It's exactly that. Even in Big Brother US right now, there's like rumblings about like, do we have live feeds? Do we have not? That has very much been in like the cultural like zeitgeist in Australia, at least from my common San Diego Nancy Drewing, is that the producers are, after what happened last year in the States with the three people of color being the first three booths and a controversial winner, the producers here who are relaunching a product already mired in past controversy, they have been rumored to be very trepidatious about the live feed element of it all. Of, okay, so do we want to, like, let's try to avoid getting on TMZ. Let's try to avoid making headlines. Let's try to contain the madness as much as possible, and we can even give the audience the illusion of control by saying they can vote for the winner, even though we're putting our thumb on the scale in terms of like a winner's edit. So we actually get to decide. We have all the power. It's very much a case, like you said, Taryn, of no live feeds versus no live feeds, of trying to stymie controversy.
Yeah, it's it makes sense, and it makes sense why it's such a half-baked formula, because it wasn't intended to create the best game or even the best television. It was intended to avoid controversy, and they're sort of like piecing together what they can to make it work in that way. I think that makes a lot of sense. I can't imagine they were overly pleased with this boot order, but without live feeds, they're sort of able to kind of like push through it, I guess. It's because he's just too much of a physical threat. That's it. Oh, and Alan, he was just playing too hard. And Laura, you know, she took the binder that time.
She washed her dish like a little aggressively. Yeah. It's like, oh, and Laura, she also put a shaker bottle in the fridge that one time. Oh, and right? Maybe she like dressed like a snake or said she had snake-like tendencies. Maybe she threw a microphone in the hot tub. I don't know. Laura, it has nothing to do with how she looks. Absolutely nothing.
Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
And we're back. So let's get back to the show. That's what's going on here. Chad and Sophie, they have canoodled as much as they're allowed to. And we're going to head toward the nomination challenge, I guess it's called.
Bad name, by the way. Can we just call it the HOH?
That's what I want to call it.
Name, and I just think, okay, I have notes in terms of how we can tweak the format, and we'll go through that. But producers, anyone listening, if you get renewed for season two, just turn the word nominator into head of household. Like, it's really easy. Just do it, please. You'll make all of our lives easier.
Yeah, it's head of household. And if you don't want to, if you're like the kind of like, actually, they're clearly not concerned about copying the US because of, it's the Big Brother takeover, because we've never heard that phrase before.
They even recycling twists from Big Brother Canada. So let's be fair.
Right.
They are very, like, they have no problems, like, appropriation.
Yeah, so go ahead, just call it the HOH, you know, go for it.
Why don't we just call it the HOH for the rest of this podcast? Like, no, let's stop calling it the nominee, let's just say HOH. Like,
yes, all right. So so we get a little bit from Angela prior to the HOH, where she's talking with a group of people. She's talking with a group of people. Marissa now seems to be firmly on the side of Angela after being nominated by Talia and Sarah in the previous episode. We didn't really get to see when that happened or how it happened, but and that seems to be a sort of a running thing that we get. There's like a chunk missing from every at the beginning of every episode, that from when the eviction happened to when the episode starts. There's never any fallout content, but Marissa is on board with Angela now. Kieran is I think just by default as an outcast in with them. He seems to have some kind of deal with them, but he's not maybe not as close to them as they are to each other. And then Sarah is there as well, who also apparently has jumped sides after feeling bad about putting Hannah on the block, I guess. Not entirely sure when or why that happened, but she seems to be there. But we don't hear from her really at all or where she stands at all.
Well, let me put it from this point forward. So. Do you remember Big Brother Canada 6 when you, Taryn, were so mad about how they edited the Johnny Alley of it all? Like, that's how I feel, in that I had to like rewatch like this episode and then like look at like exit interviews, like piece together what happened. Like, for example, apparently Sarah and Hannah are like working together, and like that was like not clear at all from like
so is that from exit interviews?
Yeah, and it's also like they are like, they either are like actual allies or they're like very much close friends, and it's like that.
Well, that's
like, like, where do we get that? Where's that? Or Kieran, like, saying, oh, so the I can access voting confessionals because I'm Australian. He needs to go voting confessional for episode 6. Kieran says, I have to vote for Chad because I made an alliance with Marissa and Angela on day one. And I'm like, where is this information? It's like, oh, it's like Johnny and Ally, Big Brother Canada, it's all over again.
Yeah.
Ryan is the mastermind, everyone.
Yeah, I feel like you're my live feed correspondent, except it's exit interviews and voting confessionals.
And it's like the voting confessionals, honest to God, like they're only 3 minutes long. Those have actually had more information in terms of the strategy, like strategical insight, than like an hour and a half long episode. And that's kind of depressing.
Like, yeah. Okay, well, do you have any extra context to add to this sort of strategic so I'll tell you from my perspective in this episode, the first episode of the week, it seems like Angela has put together a group of outsiders that consists of Marissa, Sarah may be attached, Kieran may be attached, and I don't even remember who else is in the room at this point, but it doesn't seem like any of the other people really stuck to her too hard.
Well, if we're going chronologically in the episode 4, this is actually a great segue. So before the HOH, you remember there was that whole sequence of events where we have the fondue party, where I will say, putting your tongue into the chocolate fountain at a fondue party, that's a fondant.
Yeah.
Fondant.
That was gross.
So gross. I just have to mention that before we move along. But after the fondue party, we have the sequence of events where Kieran overhears, remember, like that group of people, Talia and Dan, saying, oh, I don't trust like Kieran. And then Kieran goes to the green room, where in the green room, there are Kieran, Danny, Sarah, Angela, Hannah, and Marissa. And the group of them start talking, and that's when Marissa says, why they're all supporting one person is ridiculous. And we get a great Angela Diaz where she says, the castle is shaking. Talia has an army behind her. I'm going to build my own army. I'm going to overturn this kingdom. And during that sequence, the camera cuts to Hannah and Sarah where Angela's talking about her army. And I was thinking, okay, the people in the green room, when Kieran then tells the group of people that, oh, like, they're throwing my name out there, blah, 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 They are all like so anti-Talia. And the exit press, especially from Danny, who is very angry, suggests that there is like, there was some either like alliance or like working coalition of Kieran, Danny, Sarah, Angela, Hannah, and Marissa. And the reason why that's so frustrating is that if we had that information beforehand in the episodes or live feeds, then it would make Kieran's decision to then like throw Danny under the bus like more, or Angela's decision to nominate Danny, like, I think it would make us like either understand the gameplay a bit more and like be able to critique Kieran or like Angela about like, okay, so why did you put Danny up, for example? But yeah, those group of six people are apparently working together. And they're against the alliance of so I'm gonna call the one of the groups the Angela group, and the other one we'll just call the good people, because they keep saying, we're the good guys. We're the good people. So it's to list them out, it's Talia, Daniel, Casey, Zoe, and Matt. That's five. And working with them kinda, and we'll talk about it later, Garth, Xavier, and Shane, we don't even know who he is. But yeah, it is kind of a split house, but the reason why it's frustrating is that basically it was a split house, but then the outsiders couldn't like pull their crap together. It's like, and it's like your standard typical Big Brother. We see it on every season. We're like, oh my God, the outsiders, they can do it. They can do it. Oh no, Jessica Graf, why are you nominating Ramses? Oh no. No.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
It feels like they're trying to avoid us feeling that way through editing, the edit. Like, it's so obscured so that we're not disappointed in Angela for putting up Danny.
Like, exactly. Like that's it. The edit is trying to like soften the blow of our disappointment towards Angela, especially with this twist. But once you watch the voting confessionals and the exit interviews, like, I think, like, if this were like a traditional Big Brother season, I can totally see you, Taryn, on a morning update saying, Angela nominated Danny. She's working with Danny. Zoe's right there. Like, in retrospect, Zoe is the one who then, like, through T-Gate, is like someone Angela should have just gotten out in episode 5. Mm-hmm. Like, Angela had a clear shot there where she just had to, like, nominate Zoe, Garth, and just anybody, like, who's not in her alliance. And she's like, oh, I'm going to put Danny up there because of the drama of the thing. And then, like, we will talk about it when we talk about episode 5. But yes, there is a split house. And but yeah, you're welcome.
Interesting.
From the voting commission.
There we go. So, the live feed update.
And yeah, the Angela's army.
Yes. So with that in mind, we head into the HOH competition. And it is, it's an endurance. This is very Survivor, where they're going to be standing on a pole with, footholds that will get more and more difficult as they climb up, and they will be forced to climb up at, varying intervals throughout the competition. Many people are going to have problems with this competition. It takes a long time. It eventually comes down to Sophie and Angela. We get the great moment of Angela pulling out the lip gloss, putting it on mid challenge, and then makes a deal with Sophie that she completely ignores.
It's like such a flex when somebody's like, oh, I'm just going to like, I just want some tea.
Well, she has her tea. When she has her tea, she is super powered. She can't be stopped. When she doesn't have her tea, she can't do it. She can't pull it out. She gets sick.
It must be like her life force. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like her mana.
It's like Popeye with a spinach.
Popeye with a spinach, or like in like Final Fantasy, like your mana to like power up your magic.
Yes.
It's like,
yes, she needs the tea.
I mean, she put her tea and her lip gloss in her bra, so maybe when she was pulling her lip gloss out, she was getting a sniff of the tea inside there as well. She enabled her to win the competition.
That's really it. She spiked the lip gloss in tea, just so she'd have the taste of it. Yeah.
Like, oh, it's giving her the strength to carry on. But I wrote in my notes that this challenge is very poverty-esque. Like, both of the challenges Angela won between hanging on a pole with small footholds and holding her hand up for a really long time. I just wrote poverty and Angela both doing queen things.
There you go. I was surprised. I really felt like Sophie would have won this one, especially because we got content at the start. We found out that she was like going to be an Olympic gymnast. And I was like, so obviously she's going to have a great chance to win this. The edit is kind of pointing in that direction. And yet Angela doesn't even seem like it's close. It seems like Sophie is struggling here and she's just trying to come up with any kind of deal that she can make at this point.
I agree. I think Sophie knew that, okay, I'm kind of like on a teetering here. Let's make a deal. And to her credit, I'm going to give Sophie, my potential maybe not winner, some credit here. Like, for someone who's part of the mateship crew, the We're the Good People crew, she like at least had like the cojones to be like, okay, let's do classic Big Brother. I'm going to cut a deal with you. And like, it was not like even like a, oh, could you like be my friend thing? Like Sophie was like, no, like, am I safe? Could you like protect Chad as well? And I think if she just ended it there with like me and Chad done, it would have been fine. I think she just got a little bit, I think, greedy, where she's like, Dan as well, and Talia. Like when Angela said, I might be putting Talia up, Sophie should have just been like, I didn't hear you. Oh, bye. I think Sophie is someone where I got a hint from some of her pre-season press that she either has watched a season of American Big Brother or two, but not a lot. Like Alan is like a super fan. He's like watched Big Brother Canada, for example. Sophie apparently has like some inkling. And I'm thinking, okay, this is definitely her throwing the challenge, in my opinion. I think even though she was struggling, the way she came off after Angela said, you're safe, you're safe, you're safe, I think that was a challenge throw. I think it might actually be the first challenge throw of the season. Which is like, oh, someone knows some strategy. Oh my God, they know what game they're playing.
There you go. Yeah, and I don't think it's the worst thing in the world for, I mean, granted, I barely know the strategic layout of the house, but, you know, for Talia to leave, here, I don't think it's terrible for Sophie. But we'll, I guess we'll find out. But that means Angela has won and it's time to take down the king and queen of the Big Brother house. And that is Talia and Daniel. And so she's going to make sure that the two of them end up on the block. And she also recognizes that I want to put up a third person that won't go home.
Hi, Casey.
Right. Like, thank you for realizing that you don't put up a person that will go home if you want to take out the other people.
Angela, I think, from episode 5, should have listened to Angela from episode 4 about nominations.
Right.
It's like, oh, when I'm, say, nominating 3 people, let's make sure that the 3 of them are all people that I'm, like, at least okay with, like, putting in jeopardy. And all 3 of them are from the same alliance. Casey, someone who's not going to go home, and someone who's actually working with, like, Talia and Dan. So, yeah.
And Talia had tried to, conspiracies were going
conspiring
on.
Conspiring bitches. Where,
yes. Kieran, after hearing that his name is being, bandied about by the pretty people, by the good people, he is going to decide, I need to play rat. And this is before the HOH competition.
Yes.
And so he decides to rat out the other group and say, they're coming for you, Daniel. They're coming for you, Talia. I've got your back. I'm giving you information. If you win, don't put me on the block. Now, of the Kieran strategic moves that we're going to talk about, especially this week, I feel like this was the better one, but still very risky, and definitely puts him in a position where there's very little incentive for Talia or Dan to not rat him out when Angela wins or at any point in time.
This feels very Survivor Borneo because it's the season of snakes and rats. It's like, yeah. I'm of the opinion that if you're going to play the rat floater game, do it well. Kieran was as sloppy as a messy vacuum cleaner. He goes to Talia and he goes to Dan and he says, hey, I heard from Marissa and Angela and that group of people that if they win, they're going to nominate like Talia, Dan, and Ian, which I think says a lot about Ian's position in the house. Like Ian, for me, we can talk about it later. He's kind of in that Steve Moses position where he kind of like loosely attached with the good people. But he is like kind of like on the outer rungs. And when Kieran did that, we know he didn't do the rat floatery things particularly successfully, because when Dan asked him, so like who was they, like other than Marissa and Angela, he like straight away says, oh yeah, Hannah and Sarah. I'm like, oh, okay. And I'm just thinking, you know, in Survivor episode one of Winners at War, when like Boston Rob and Ben Dream were talking and Ben just like word salads out. It kind of felt a little bit of that, where Kieran, I understand what you're trying to do in principle. I'm very grateful you're trying to play strategically, but I just wish you had a little bit more finesse. Like, ultimately, these are your day one allies. It's like,
I have a theory about Kieran. I think that he is just incapable of doing anything subtly. I think that everything he does is exaggerated, including like the way that he walks, the way that he, you know, talks strategically. And I think all of this plays into why he's such a terrible driver. Like he can't press on the gas just a little bit. It's always all the way every time. And that's just who he is in every area that we see him in this game, where he's just constantly like everything he does is just full force no matter what. And that includes his gameplay for sure, as he just very, very aggressively rats out the other side. It seems to work out to some degree this week where he doesn't seemingly get caught, but it's also a situation where like maybe he probably did and we just didn't see it.
I think for Kieran, he's about as subtle as a shotgun. Like a pink shotgun, like LGBTQ pink shotgun. And the discrepancy comes where theoretically speaking, the rat floater game is great. Like he understands that, okay, this is like something that's good to do. Like let's play the middle of the house. But because his like natural personality tendencies are like you said, Taryn, aggressive, like in your face, like not subtle. Like, if you can't play that sort of game if you're this sort of person, I believe that in these social strategy games, you have to understand yourself well enough to know what kind of game is like a good fit for my personality. Like, Natalie Anderson, for example, she cannot not be an Aries. Like, that's just who she is. She will, like, put your crap out on blast, point blank and the period. Like, so you can't ask her to play, like, the under-the-radar game. Kind of like the same way you can't, like, ask, like, Andy Heron to be, like, Dave Vaughn and be, like, you know, calling at a house meeting in front of Vanessa. It's like the best games are where you understand your personality enough that it's, like, a good fit for that personality. And I think Kieran, like, he maybe read about somewhere about, oh, middle of the house, that's great. Like, being, you know, rat floatery, that's great. And he's only 21, so maybe he didn't quite understand that. Okay, because I'm the sort of person who maybe he can't do things like 70% of the way, maybe this isn't the right fit. So
yeah, he way that he tells, and we'll talk about this later with Garth too, but like the way that he goes up to Dan and Talia, this is not a video podcast, but if you could see my face, you can imagine Kieran's face. But he's just like, yeah, I just wanted to let you know that they're coming for you.
So you better get ready.
Just like, you know. You know what I'm talking about. Like, it's just so, it's so like, meet me in the alley and I'll give you the goods. Kind of like a secret agent kind of speak. Anyway, so that led to, of course, Talia confronting Angie about it. And Angie was like, don't you threaten me. And so when Angie wins, she says, you don't come for me. I'm going to get you. She puts up Daniel, Talia, and Casey, and Talia is not pleased.
She's not a very happy camper, let's say that.
Yes. And so immediately, like with any quote unquote good person alliance, they immediately start spiraling, like, oh, do we just, what do we put votes on everyone to make it fair?
Oh my God. When they said it was like, I was getting flashbacks to Big Brother 6 and the friendship. Like it is like yeah. this alliance. I'm trying to call them like the good people on purpose rather than the pretty people. Cause their energy is very like Big Brother 2, like the other people, or like the friendship in Big Brother 6. Like they hate the word alliance and strategy, but they will say things like, we won't play until our friends get to the end and then we'll figure it out, I guess. Or they will like Talia literally,
it's the word, yeah,
like yeah, with
it's the word people who, yeah, people who are like, how dare they play this game like it's a game? This is real life. The people who are basically in denial and like super judgmental about the thing that they are doing, like it's how the real world works, where it's like how these other people who aren't succeeding right now because of, you know, how the system works. Why are they doing things that are wrong trying to change it? It's everyone has a fair shot. Everything's working out for me and I don't have to do anything bad. It has nothing to do with the fact of who I am and where I came from. It's just how things are and nobody should be trying to change it. It's terrible of them.
How dare you not root for my success? How dare you?
Yeah.
How dare you just not lay down and die for me? Like, just put your cards on the table, walk out the door, and why can't you just do that like a good person? Like, just let me win. Just let me win. And it's just, like you said, like, Karen, in that the way that they were breaking down after, like, Angela won, it's like crying. They were full on sobbing. It was just, it's the hypocrisy that I think people don't like. Well, at least, okay, so Angela may have made a bad move. Kieran may have ratted out too much. But why people like them is because at least they know what game they signed up for. They're saying, okay, fine, like, this is the game, and I'm going to do this, and it's just a game. It becomes more frustrating when, say, a Casey or a Zoe in that conversation, Zoe will say, I just think we should spread out the votes because I think it's fair. And then later on, she's like, how dare Angela nominate me? How dare she? And it's like, it's hypocrisy. You're essentially saying that you have the permission to play the game. People who either are not your friends or don't look like you don't have the same privileges as you do. And you are getting indignant when they refuse to accept your version of reality.
Yes. So it comes down to the vote. I gotta say, we referred to this as tribal council in the last podcast. Oh, yeah. This time where Sonia comes, and I liked Sonia in the first episode, but every time this portion of the show comes up, I like try to pay attention, and my mind just goes. It's just a bunch of nothing to me. I just can't.
Not just you in that. Like, I zone out too. It's a Sonia thing, I think, in that. So I think I actually like this in theory. So the eviction room is basically tribal council, and this is very survivory, where essentially you have the host asking probing questions. And I think it's a way of balancing out the lack of, I would say, strategical, like, time between the HOH end and the nominations. So if we don't have that, there needs to be like something to like balance that out strategy wise. Mm-hmm. So we have essentially tribal council. The issue with why it's boring is because one, some of these people are not playing.
Yeah.
And they're giving very like, oh, I'm voting for my friends answers. And two, Sonia, she's, I like her, but let's say that she's not exactly the most interesting person, strategically speaking. She wasn't the host of Big Brother Australia at its heyday. That was Gretel Colleen. Most people who are like fans of OG Big Brother are fans of Gretel, who was in negotiations to come back for this one and for unknown reasons didn't. Sonia was the one who took over during the brief time like in between Gretel and Kyle and Jackie O. Yeah, Big Brother Australia has had four hosts. Gretel, Sonia, Kyle and Jackie O, and then now Sonia again. And Sonia, fans are mixed on her because she gives like very like basic questions. She's from Dancing with the Stars. Mm-hmm. Like, that's her background. So she's not going to ask like celebrities probing questions. And if you want to do the tribal council format, then you can't have someone like, say, like a Julie Chen or Sonia in terms of their level of engagement. Right. You need someone like a Jonathan LaPaglia and Arissa Cox, mm-hmm. or Jeff Probst, who will like dig in there and like pull it out. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I think this is a great take. And I think it's probably one of the main reasons why this is such nothing.
Gretel would have been good. But I'll give you that. Like, you don't have to take my word on it, but Gretel, the OG host, would have been great at this. Like, she's very incisive. So she's a journalist by trade. So.
All right. So they go to vote.
Well, it was an 11-4-1 vote. It was actually 4 votes for Dan, 1 vote for Casey. Talia was sobbing as she's thinking, I can't, it hurts me so much to vote for Dan. And it's just, Dan was having a nervous breakdown when he was the only vote for Casey saying, I can't do this. It was just really ironic for me that, so in the editing, we see Dan vote for Casey first. So Dan saying, I care about you so much, Talia. I'm not going to vote for you. And then like we cut to like Talia being like, I vote for Dan. For some reason, that made me laugh so much where I'm like, oh, these two don't even care about each other. And what's even more awkward is that the show presented Dan and Talia like a showmance. But Dan has a girlfriend. Like in episode 1, he said, oh, there's like someone outside the house that I want to go back to. And spoiler alert, he's back with that girl. So.
Yeah.
Very Figgy and Taylor. I think Figgy and Taylor is a good example to bring up. I think just to take a quick note, because I got a few DMs about this to like bring this up. Talia is getting a lot of hate online. I'm going to kindly ask everyone here. Look, I love making fun of Talia and the crime, but I do think that there is a double standard going on in terms of how much this show is like attributing all of that alliance's energy onto her and making her like the scapegoat. And Dan, if anything, who was saying things like, Ange, like, I'm going to come for you. Like, how dare you? And is like, just like puffing himself up. Is just as culpable. Fans, let's be nice to Natalia. She won 2 HOHs. She at least was like willing to like go out on a limb and do these things. And some people are even comparing her to Aaron. I don't personally subscribe to that theory because I don't think like Talia has had anything that bad. And I'm saying that as a person of color. Like, I don't see the Talia Aaron thing. I think that Talia and Dan are more like Figgy and Taylor in that essentially. Both women made the same mistake in that they were allowing themselves to be the alpha or the more visible person in that showman's pair and essentially were doing all of these things on the like that benefited the guy more than herself. Mm-hmm. And in the end, he has a girlfriend. So I personally wouldn't mind seeing Talia come back personally, because I do think the double standard stuff aside, she did make a big impact in terms of like she popped as a personality, which is more than I can say for Casey. So it's
like, that's something that I noticed in the previous week, that it already had felt like they're trying to pin this all on Talia and keep Daniel out of it. I think I brought that up in a previous podcast. And then you saw that play out here where like, this is why they were doing that, because Talia is going to take the fall here. And then after Talia leaves, Daniel even gets in episode five, like a diary room session where he's like, oh man, I didn't even realize what she was doing. Like basically trying to clear his name of all of it. And the edit supports it. Like the edit is now like now Daniel is the, you know, the cuddly teddy bear that they wanted him to be. Right. Without the influence of evil Talia, Daniel is now innocent of all crimes, and it's everybody else that wants Angela. Yeah, you're sure he's with them, but now lots of other people are talking about wanting Angela gone, and Daniel is just he's just along for the ride, guys. He's just he's a lovable guy.
He's a lovable guy who knows how to train the hounds, as we'll go through later on. And I think that's an important point to raise, in that I don't like Daniel, but I think in terms of the gameplay, he kind of is like, I like to say that he's like a Cappy trapped in a Adam from Big Brother Canada body, in that he has the whole shrine and cult around him and people worshiping him, except in this timeline, Maggie went home instead of Cappy. That's how I look at it. And I think it makes me wonder how Big Brother 6 would have gone if Cappy stayed around instead of Maggie.
Now we know. Well, I mean, I think it was the wrong choice. At the end, I mean, it made for a great moment. And could you imagine Angela saying to Talia, no, I didn't seal your part. I did seal your fate. That is what I did. That's,
Angela's the K-star now, I guess.
Yes.
But I hope she goes further than K-star. That's fingers crossed.
I mean, very like K-star in that she's going to leave soon after and going to have some kind of return trip. Hopefully the return trip is more successful.
Now I'm imagining Marissa being the Janelle, and Marissa, 61-year-old Marissa's like, bye-bye, bitches.
I mean, she's been doing pretty well at the comps.
And she does wear pink. And she does. There and she's go. Very fit.
I think we're onto something here.
Marissa Piazina.
All right. So we head into Talia's gone. She is evicted from the game. The queen is dead. Long live the queen, Queen Angela.
We talked about the full notes against Talia, though.
Yes.
Briefly. Okay. So the four people who voted for Talia, I'm just going to double check to make sure I have this correct. Well, okay. Here they are. It's Daniel. Sorry, not Daniel. It was okay, we're looking at
the votes for Daniel. The four votes for Daniel, you mean?
Actually, you know what? We don't need to discuss it because it's completely irrelevant. And all of in my notes, it just said they make no sense because all of their reasonings were I like this person more than this other person, but then like the next episode contradicts it. I think the voting confessionals for episode 5 and 6. Are more illuminating and correct. I think for the Talia Dan Casey thing, other than like Dan's vote, it was, I think, more of a case of the house finally saying, oh my God, we finally have something that is not like King Daniel's thing. And they were just happy to just throw their votes wherever.
Okay.
Let's continue.
All right. So we head into episode 5 and now Talia's gone. Daniel is reformed. The whole house is shaken up and different. I don't know. Again, I don't know how true this is, but it seems like all the momentum that Angela and this sort of outsider group had, it's like she built this revolution. They chopped off the head of one of the rulers, and then they were like, all right, pack it up. Let's go home. We succeeded. And then they just kind of disbanded. That's what it felt like in the episode. You're right.
Like it did. Like in Big Brother Canada 6, Erica, remember when she won her second HOH and nominated Marin and I want to say Ryan. And she did it because like, oh, I don't want to like, you know, cause any ruffle, any feathers and cause any waves. And then the next week she goes home. It was very that. And I think in that, in the episode itself, like Angela says that, oh, I don't want to like cause any waves because I made this like big move. And now I don't want to like ruffle the feathers too much. So I'm going to like nominate two people who aren't in my alliance. And one person is like towards the bottom and let it figure itself out. And I think personally that was the wrong move to make, especially in Big Brother Australia, where the outgoing HOH can win the next one. They can compete in the next one, which means that once your target is on there, like you shouldn't just like then like retreat back into your shell and say, guys, I'm actually a hyena now. I'm not a lion. I'm a hyena. They're not going to, you can't unring a bell. They're not going to forget about you. Instead, I think personally, Angela and her army should have just rode the momentum, continued going forward. Just go for the other head of the snake, you know?
Yeah. It felt like there wasn't a ton here. More Kieran content, of course, where he is going to feel yet again that he is on the outs and that he needs to do something to make sure that there is a target ahead of him in the pecking order. And so his method of jumping the line and getting ahead of somebody else in the pecking order is that he is going to go to Garth and tell Garth, hey. And again, it's very trench coat in an alley. I got something for you. Hey, I heard that Danny thinks you're a snake. I said you were a snake. Just putting that out there. Just going to let you, whatever you want to do with it. I was astonished that Garth bought a word of it.
I was astonished Kieran was saying that at the dining table with like multiple people saying that. And I'm like, you know, people have ears, right? Anyone, like Casey was sitting, like, if you look at the shot, she's sitting literally right next to them. I'm like, you are so unsettled. Take a look around before you decide to rat someone out like that.
Like, how did he later is going to say, I thought this would bring me closer to Garth. But like, how do you think this is going to play out? Like, when somebody hears that somebody thinks they're a snake and like clearly dislikes them, they're not just going to be like, oh, thank you so much, Kieran. I'm just going to sit on this information that has made me incredibly uncomfortable. Of course, they're going to go and they're going to want to figure it out and change it. They're going to want to, if Dany thinks I'm a snake, I want her to not think I'm a snake anymore. And that means like that Garth is incentivized to go talk to Dany. And what's the best way to get Dany to not think you're a snake anymore, to bond with her? Find a common enemy. Who's a great common enemy? The person that ratted her out in the first place. So like, it's honestly, I was shocked that he didn't do that. And it's bad on Garth that he's going to take this information and then just like get mad at Dany for an innocuous comment. But this really shouldn't have worked out for Kieran for as long as it did, but it eventually is going to come back around.
It was kind of like watching two blind men trying to lead each other out of a tunnel. It was like they were both playing badly, and somehow it just spiraled out of control, and then Zoe got involved. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Like it was like watching like blindfolded people trying to build a statue out of like paper mache.
Yeah. So Garth takes this information and he's just like, so I guess Dany thinks I'm a snake. And he goes and he asks people about it. And they're like, I don't know. I haven't heard that. And he's like, well, Kieran told me. And then he walks by a bedroom that Dany is in. And she says, oh, they're in the green room. And he's like,
Dany,
they're in the green room. Excuse me. That was terrible. He goes in there. It's like, can you believe what Dany just did? They're like, oh my God, what did she do? He's like, I walked by and she just said to me, the girls are in the green. I'm like, yes. Like, yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's like, no, it was like really bad. and then so Zoe then goes and grabs Dany and she's like, did you just say this thing? And she's like, no, I didn't mean it that way. I don't know what's going on. And it just blows into this thing. And somehow Kieran's name, it gets kept out of it for long enough that this is all going to fall on Dany.
It was a game of telephone where, because everyone involved was so sloppy and not thinking about their self-interest and incentives, they were blowing things out of control. Like, essentially, mm-hmm. what happened is that, so you have Kieran who recognizes that, okay, I've been nominated twice. I feel very vulnerable. I want to try and build a relationship with Garth. And something like Cass said it on Kagayan, what bonds people together? Shared hatred for a common enemy. And like, I wrote down the DR. Kieran said that YP Dany is that Dany is like a day two like intruder and is someone I can believe Garth would not like. So it's like, okay, I can kind of see the logic there in that if Garth, okay, so we can talk more about Garth later and his lack of bad gameplay, but Garth is essentially aligned with the good people, but the good people don't really care about him that much. He's just working mm-hmm. with them. So Kieran's logic kind of makes sense in that if Kieran said Zoe thinks you're a snake, Garth wouldn't buy that. Zoe's a good person. But Dany, no, Dany, she's a bad person. And considering Kieran's confessional that, voting confessional that Marissa and Angela are his day one allies, then okay, Dany, it's either Dany, Hannah, or Sarah. Sarah was like working. Sarah's a weird one in that other than the knee thing, we don't know much about her, but she seems relatively well-liked. She's the youngest in the house. She's 19. She has like a good enough social game that I think throwing her name out there might've really blown back on Kieran. And then there's Hannah, who's like, yeah, Talia hates her, but I think everyone else is kind of fine with her now. So it's Dany, but
yeah. And Dany in the diary room says that her strategy is, I'm just going to do nothing. So I think probably the right target of if you're going to do this, I think Dany was probably the right call and probably why this lasts as long as
like
it does.
Like everybody involved played, like I call episode 5 the episode where everyone played badly. And then the person who played really? The least badly did the best. So Dany in her exit interview said that, oh, I've watched Big Brother, like I know what floating is and blah, blah, blah. Like in her head, she was thinking, okay, like I'll float her. It's like someone who does nothing. And like, if I like don't ruffle feathers, then I'll be fine. But like from Kieran's mind, if you are aligned with me in this like big group of six and you're not like my closest ally and you're not going to really fight for me and you're going to do nothing and not really even campaign, then what use are you to me? Steve Moses said, oh, a good ally is like, you want to take as much as you can out of an alliance while contributing the least. But if like Danny is doing that too, like openly, then like, I go, bye Felicia.
Well, like, have we gotten to the point where, you know, floating was a strategy that June and Allie use in Big Brother 4, and it works very well, to, you know, Big Brother 7, Dr. Will's throwing shade on floaters, to season 13, Rachel says, floaters grab a life vest. It's now been completely defined incorrectly to be, like, a coaster. Somebody does nothing. Then... Right, but then we have people like, no, no, floating is a legitimate strategy and it works well. Is somebody like Danny not getting the full picture of that? Like, oh, floating means doing nothing, but it's a good strategy and works well? Oh, I guess I'll do that. Like, that's the wrong thing. No.
Funny to me where I'm like, okay, so Danny, you recognize you, it's like a strange combination of, because usually when people think floating means doing nothing, it's like, oh, I shouldn't do that. Floaters are bad. Floaters get a grab a life vest. Let's get them out. Or it's like floating is a good thing. It's active. It's purposeful. It means that you're connected with everybody. Danny is like a strange hybrid where she's saying, okay, floating is good. I should do it, but it means I do nothing.
Yeah.
It's like, where do you find just- these people?
It's just like Big Brother Australia. It's the wrong combination. It's the wrong parts to combine of the things.
It's like they went to Wikipedia and like read the summary of like a movie and being like, oh, Parasite is about literal parasites, guys. It's about like a body infection.
It's about pretty houses and rich people, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that's what it's about. God. And so like to go back to the how it spiraled out of control, Kieran had the right idea. But one, he said it in front of all these people. Two, he had no subtlety. And three, Garth reacted like, Garth is one of those like mateshipy people where in Australia, mateship is a concept where it's like fair dinkum, fair shot for everybody. Got to be a good bloke. A word that gets thrown around a lot is be a fair guy. Be a good person. Like, that's an actual thing here. We call it, like, parochialism, very tall poppy syndrome. Garth, I think, overreacted to Kieran's relatively harmless comment because in his mind, it's like, being called a snake is the worst thing in the world. How dare you accuse me of strategizing in a social strategy game? How dare you? And then, he then, like, doesn't confront Danny about it. And then takes like the green room comment in the worst way possible. We should talk about how Zoe and Casey reacted. Because their reaction was something too.
And you can kind of understand where like the way that he's describing it is so off base that they're like, okay, like, cause I think even if he didn't describe it in a certain way, like just the tone that he's using kind of implies like you should be on my, like she did something very offensive. You're like, oh wow. This is what she did. Like, okay. Yeah. Ooh, wow. It really wasn't, and he's really misrepresenting how it was, and then it blows up into something you really shouldn't.
It blew up because in international relations, there's this theory called rational choice theory, kind of like what Vanessa talked about. It essentially presupposes that if you're in a game or you're in like say international like an arms race, right? In order for you to escalate your arms, you have to assume that the other person is rational. And that they're going to act in their best self-interest. Kieran, when he told Garth, Danny thinks you're a snake, in his mind, even in the DR, he says, like, I thought this would bring us closer because he thought Garth was a self-interested person and he wouldn't, like, freak out so much about being called even remotely strategic. It's not like Danny, he said, oh, Danny says that you're, like, a bad person and that you smell or that, like critiquing his appearance. It's that literally just he thinks you're a bit snaky. And then Garth, then when he, like, said interpreted Danny's comment in that way and then told Zoe and Casey, in his mind he was assuming that okay, the other people like you, Zoe, Casey and Danny would also act in a rational way, and it's like a game of telephone where each person thinks that they're rational and the next group of people is just as rational as them, but because of the discrepancy in their levels of rationality it gets more and more irrational and blown out of control.
And I think they're miscalculating what's rational in the first place. I think, because, like I said, I think like if Garth is a rational, self-interested player, he does do something with that information. He doesn't just accept it and then get closer to Kieran through it. But you know, it's it plays out the way it plays out, and it's going to culminate in this HOH competition. We can skip over the driving. We already talked about it. Kieran just lacks subtlety, and that very much shows itself in his driving ability. Yes. And so and even when he is explaining like so you guys get pizza, I don't get pizza, it's fine.
You should watch his YouTube channel actually. So Kieran is actually well known in Australia for having a YouTube channel.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, he has 21,000 like views on all of his videos. He's like actually like famous for bad driving. They're really funny. Some of the videos we see in his montage of his parents, hilarious. He's known as Australia's worst driver. Because his videos of YouTube channel of him like bad driving, it's like worse than what we saw on the show. At one point, he's like at a roundabout and he stops and another car nearly like hits him. And his mother is saying, Kieran, we could have died. And Kieran said, oh, we didn't. Pretty funny if you have to watch in quarantine.
Well, we get to the HOH competition. This competition, they're going to have to hold, plug up a little hole that has a thing of water in it, colored water. And they, you can let go. It's not like Survivor where like the slightest movement ends your time in the competition. Yeah. You can let go. You can go in, have some tea, come back. Plug up the hole again if you want. As long as all the water doesn't drain, you'll be fine. And so they use some things to tempt people away from the competition. I thought that in particular, Chad's dog was very targeted. Chad, we have your dog in the diary room. Would you like to come and play with your dog? Obviously. And nobody else had like, we have your mother in the diary room. Why is only Chad the one that is tempted by a dog?
Like Chad, like you can tell, okay, hot tip about Big Brother Australia. You can tell who the producers like based on who are able to like talk about their pets. Like in the beginning of this episode, we have a whole segment of Ian saying, Patricia died. His spider died and Angela comforts him and Patricia hasn't died yet. Patricia dies in episode 6. I'm skipping ahead. In the beginning of episode 5, Ian is saying he misses Patricia and there's a whole segment about how he misses his like spiders. And I'm thinking Shane has kids. Shane has children. So we're saying in the balance of probabilities, Ian missing his spider is more important than Shane, a father of three, missing his children. Or Chad and his dog, like Chad gets his dog to come in, but like all of these other people, they don't have people that like are important to them or pets that are important to them. Like, yeah. I think it would have been really funny though if they got like Chad's dog and put it in the gingerbread house when Angela.
If it was Chad's dog.
Oh, that's so funny. And Chad's like, oh, that's my dog.
He would have been so offended. Why are you so scared of me, Satoru? All right. Daniel is going to give up this HOH for a steak.
That makes sense, though. Like, if we look at earlier in the episode, Angela and Daniel have a conversation, right? Where Daniel, like, says, oh, I'm going to be a good guy now. And I'm going to, like, be nice, which is, it's kind of hilarious that his idea of being nice is just not being a complete, like, giant, D-I-C-K. It's like, yeah. Oh, I'm so nice. But in that conversation, I wrote in my notes that, Angela and like Daniel talk it out. And yeah, it actually says, yeah, they make a deal. But Daniel says, if I win, I'm not going to put you up. And if you win, you're not going to put me up for like, and I think it says like for a bit of time, which I'm for, I don't even know what that means, but I'm just going to assume it's like two or three HOHs or something. So I think that's why Daniel felt okay about stepping down, because he knew there's a deal and his people are not going to nominate him, so like he only needs to worry about Marissa, Sarah and Hannah winning, and that's three people.
And Marissa did pretty well. But clearly he felt very comfortable. We see that, Garth and Kieran are going to race for an advantage, which is just an extra vote, which ultimately is not really going to matter.
It's just so funny to me that Garth, the one who's saying, "How dare you say I'm strategic," is also the same one who's like racing to get an advantage.
Well, I can't let any of the strategic people get the strategic advantage. It has to be one of the good people. Need to control it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not that evil Kieran. How dare Kieran play the game? Like, how dare you? It's
like, yeah. And so this one's going to come down to Angela and Xavier, I believe.
He lives.
Yeah, I don't think we got a confession, a diary room about this, fact that he was second place, why he wanted to win, why he didn't want to win. I don't know.
Which is so strange because in my notes, it says that Xavier is invisible, but if he were visible, he'd be a Taran favorite. And let me explain that. In episode 4, we see Xavier's the one where we see during the campaigning, he says, "I don't think we should vote Casey out. Casey and I are very close." He says that. And then 5 minutes later, we all see Casey and Xavier talking. And the two of them seem to have something going on separately. And I think the fact that both of them are so under the radar that Casey's not even an option and Xavier is like aligned with her, I think says a lot. Also, his voting confessionals are they're very bland, which is a bland. He's kind of your favorite breakfast food, yogurt, in that he's very he's good for you. He's not going to cause trouble. He's good for you. He's digestible, palatable. And he's just, it's very hard to fault him, strategically speaking, because he's voting confession. He's voted with the majority every time. He seems to, in his voting confessionals, know who the target is and seems to, imply that. And also, in the exit interviews, Alan, says, Casey and Xavier, they're nothings. They barely speak. They just listen more. And in my head, I'm well, that's what Big Brother, the early stages are, right? You, go to sleep for the first month. And I think I like Xavier personally because I think he knows what he's doing. It's not like a Danny where she's like, "I'm floating and I'm going to do nothing." It's no, I'm going to keep my mouth shut. I'm going to listen. And if someone who I do care about, a Casey, is in danger, I'm going to speak up and then hide back again. So. But yeah,
he spoke twice in the first 4 episodes, and both times he spoke for me, which I appreciated. He said, "I don't want Subong to go. He seems a great guy." I was like, "Thank you. I feel the same way." And then he said, "What's up with these people in their weird phobias?" And I was like, "Thank you. That's how I feel right now."
He's a normal person, which I appreciate. And I think maybe that's why he's not getting airtime, because he's not kooky or out there a lot of these people. But I think if you want to win this game, is it necessary to be a kooky weirdo who's getting all the attention? I don't know.
But Angela is going to win again after taking out the lip gloss again. I don't love the second win in a row, especially when you're not really going to do anything with it.
And Xavier even said, "Hey, do you want to talk, Angela?" When it was the two of them, he even said, I'm sure you noticed too, Taran. He said, "Do you want to talk?" And Angela's no. And I'm he clearly wants to make a deal. Just say, "Hey, am I good if you win? That's it. That's all you need."
And we don't know anything about Xavier, but he doesn't strike me as the kind of person that would make a deal and go back on it with one person. You know what I mean?
And that's so public, too.
Exactly. Say, "Keep me safe and we're good," and you're probably good. Probably you and Marissa could probably be good to give it to him. I'm sure he'd be fine to take out Danny.
He's not close to them. Literally, that's three people he could have easily thrown up. Danny, Hannah, Sarah, and Kieran. He didn't, if I were Angela in that position, it was 6 hours now. My arm hurts. I won the last competition. Do I really need to win this one? Especially when Xavier is literally saying, "Let's make a deal" at the 6 hour mark.
Yeah, I think you have two options. Either you need to win or make a deal in order to protect all of your people and make sure that somebody who is not one of your people is gone, or you make a deal to protect yourself and you let one of your people go without having to put a target on your back and without having to do it yourself. But she wins and then takes out one of her people.
Which is so crazy. And like, even if you look at the Big Brother Australia format, the fact that you're not able to strategize much off, like, you have to go immediately make your nominations, incentivizes people to make deals, because once the deal is made and the competition immediately ends, like, other allies are not able to, like, worm their way into the room and say, no, go back on the deal. Mm. It's like, if Xavier makes the deal with Angela, Angela drops out, Xavier immediately goes to the DR. We really think he's going to be like, oh, I should, like, do what my allies want. It's like, no, in his mind, the last thing in his mind is, here's the deal. So that's one person I should nominate.
Yeah. So Angela is going to take this one, and she is going to nominate, she's going to nominate Danny, Garth, and Zoe. And Zoe. Yeah. And so the campaigning here, it makes it seem like all the votes are going to fall on Zoe until Kieran gets involved and he somehow flips the vote on to Danny because he's afraid of his lie getting out. This strikes me as not correct, though.
And it has stricken you correctly. It's not good. It's like, firstly, okay, I'm going to give Angela some slack by saying she was delirious in the rain. That was an intense challenge. Hand up in the rain, 6 hours, has to immediately go in. And even her reasoning, she's like, oh, I don't know what to do. She's like, clearly, like, tired. I'm going to say, fine. Maybe I'm going to cut you some slack and say, because she says, I didn't want to ruffle feathers. I guess I'll put up people associated with that drama, like the three of them. And it's like, at least she has, like, a piece of Vanessa, what a reason for nominating three people. But then Kieran's not delirious. He wasn't standing in the rain for 6 hours. And the votes were even going to Zoe. And the reason why the votes go to Zoe, and we can talk about it later when we talk about the vote count, which is, like, I think where we can dig into the strategy more. The reason why Zoe could have gone out here is that Shane, who we've not spoken of any point in this, like, episode, Shane votes for Zoe, even though Danny goes. Shane wants Zoe out for personal reasons. And, like, Ian, he even implies that he doesn't particularly like Zoe. So the votes were there, just, like, to potentially get Zoe out. But it sounds like Kieran's like, yeah, but I did something bad, so I need to cover up my mistake by creating a bigger mistake.
Oh, man. It's just like a comedy of errors here. This, it's all over the place.
I mean, do you want me to read out his DR of his reasoning for why Danny? Sure. Cause it's pretty bad. Yeah. So exact quote is, it seems that the votes are currently on Zoe, but due to the fact that I lied to Garth about something Danny said, I'm going to have to try my best to convince people to flip their vote to Danny and drop her like a hot cake. I don't know about you, but you don't ever want to drop a cake, regardless of whether it's hot or not. Because if you drop a cake, all you're doing is making a mess and wasting food, especially in a game about numbers.
Well, so this vote is it's 11-3-2. There are, you know, five votes that aren't for Danny, but they're split. what's the strategy?
So, okay. How do we bring this down? Okay, so firstly, Garth, he uses his extra vote here. So technically, there's 16 available votes because Angela is not voting. So out of 16, you need 9. Because we don't know about the tie breaks, because I'm so frustrated with that. I really dug around to find out what happens when there's, like, a tie other than, like, the nominator, like, breaking the tie. But what happens, like, later down the line, say, at, like, final four? It's like, I don't know. It's just very – but my point is that, okay, so out of – it has to be a 9-7 vote. And the five people who didn't vote for Danny were Hannah, Sarah, Danny, Marissa, and Shane. So four out of those five makes sense. They're all aligned with Angela. So all they need, Angela already made this really hard by doing her, like, a putting up a Ramses essentially. And in order for them to win out, they need four more votes. And the only way that they get four more votes is they need all of Kieran, Ian, and Garth's two votes in order for them to get the 9 that's needed. That's how hard it is. And it looked like at one point that, like, judging from Kieran's comment and from, like, Ian's voting confessional, it does sound like maybe Garth was planning to vote Zoe out, which is crazy in that, like, here's a window of opportunity where Garth, who's, like, not in with the good people, is, like, for some reason has a personal issue with Zoe or whatever, is, like, you know, is irrationality saying, okay, I'll throw my two votes on her. But then they don't. because Kieran is like, I did an oopsie. I want to cover it up. And it's just so frustrating in that Angela made the initial mistake, but then because Shane is willing to like be personal and Garth is willing to be personal and these two other people are willing to make a mistake, they're nearly able to do the true wrongs equal a right, but they fail even with that. So it's in the end, the good people win by failing upwards, by failing the least.
There you go. And so Dani is voted out, but on her way out, she lets Garth know, I didn't say that, by the way. That is going to come back and haunt Kieran in episode 6.
Yep. It's going to haunt them like the ghost in the attic.
But again, I feel like we didn't really see the fallout here. Like, at the start of episode 6, Kieran's just like, yep, everybody knows I lied now. I was like, when did that happen? Like, when did this house meeting happen where everybody shared this info and confronted Kieran about it? Why are we not seeing what's going on?
It's like we're looking at a puzzle, but there are several pieces missing at every episode. And we have to, play forensics to piece it together. And that's frustrating. It's something we see in Australian Survivor 2, where we see, okay, we kind of know who's working with who, but where the hell is Michelle Dugan? She doesn't appear until like the swap. What the hell is Sarah Talik doing? We have to basically use our minds, comb information and put it together.
And there's really no excuse with an hour and 20 minutes to work with per episode. I haven't timed it, but they have to spend at least 20 minutes per episode just on people walking down hallways.
Or on Chad's dog, or Ian Spider.
Sure, yeah.
Ian Spider Patricia has gotten more airtime than Shane, which is so disappointing.
Mm. Yeah.
But one point I will make about game mechanic issues, how do you feel about this proposal? So I think one of the issues with this format is that they're trying to half-ass two things, not whole-assing one thing. They should either just do the whole UK thing or go the full North American route in terms of format. Mm-hmm. And if they're going to do this half-assing thing, I think one thing they need to change is that the HOH needs to have a vote. And this is the reason why. Because the HOH right now can't vote, essentially, and the people who are on the block can vote, that means that your alliance has one less vote and all of the other people in the opposite alliance can vote, which means in the end game when the numbers get really slim, it's actually a disadvantage to win HOH because say that the only way for you to get your target out is for all three people on the block to be people that you're happy to get rid of. But say you're at final 7 or final 6 or final 5, one of those people is going to accidentally be a person that you don't necessarily want to get out, like your target, which means that it's not in your best incentive to win HOH. And I think that's a game design flaw. I think that because they allow the nominees to vote, but not the HOH to vote, it's essentially creating this bad dilemma where you're encouraging people to essentially play passively and to not win competitions and stuff in the end game. And I think they need to fix that. Either just go with the North American format of both the nominees and the HOH can't vote unless it's a tie, because that's what they do with three nominees in the States. It's that, if there's a roadkill nominee or whatever, the nominee still can't vote, Or it's just do the whole Survivor thing. If it's Survivor, then everyone can vote, even if you have the immunity necklace. You know what I mean? It's not good.
I think depending on the tiebreak rule, it might work out okay. So say final 5, say you're still winning HOH, nominating three people, say that it's a 3-2 split, right now. And you are in the majority, you have 3 versus the other 2. Then if you win, you put up, 3 people, which means that you have to put up one of your own alliance members, which means the vote will end up in a tie, 2-2. Yeah. If the tiebreaker means that you break the tie as HOH, then it's fine. You still maintain your majority. And if you're in the minority, then you're screwed anyway. You just win safety with HOH. Regardless, at final 5, you win HOH, you get to put up 3 of the other people, and you don't have to put up your own person, so you still get to take out your target. And so, like, the final six, same thing. If you win, you get to put up three of the other people. Final four, of course, is, you know, where things get really tricky. But I would imagine they have some kind of different method there. So I'm not sure I think the HOH voting wouldn't change too much. But I agree that overall, like, all of these things, all these little things together are creating an environment where passive gameplay is rewarded. And there's less incentive to play hard, especially with the sort of, just sort of overall social structure of the game in Australia.
You're right in that, I think with the design element, essentially the allowing everyone to vote and the HOH being able to compete again, that's essentially a very Survivor style, right? You have the eviction room being tribal and everything. And in Survivor, traditionally, the votes are resolved through like a rock draw. And in Big Brother, like, it's just a different game in that the outgoing HOH can't compete again, the nominees can't vote. And if there's a tie, the HOH breaks it. Survivor, Big Brother Australia is trying to have a cake and eat it too. It said, okay, so the HOH can compete again and the nominees can vote and it's like a big tribal council, but we're going to borrow Big Brother's tie resolution mechanic of the HOH breaks the tie. And I think it's like that scene from Friends where Rachel tries to make a trifle and it's like, so here's a layer of like custard and then beef with potatoes and onions and then more custard and jam. And it's like, no, either make your pie, like your meat pie, or make your custard trifle. Don't combine these things. If you want to be Survivor in a warehouse, then do that. You know what I mean? Like, change the tiebreak mechanic to like a rock draw or something. Or if you want to do Big Brother, just use the traditional format. Just like the HOH can't compete, the nominees can't vote. And if you want to be quirky, then fine, stick to three nominees. Like, because Big Brother North America has done three nominees before. You can keep that.
Yeah, unsuccessfully.
Unsuccessfully. We're not asking you to ditch that. We're just saying, like, really think through why, like, the North American format has certain quirks, like the HOH can't competing again, the nominees not, and the HOH not voting. Everything is there for a reason. You know what I mean? Like, the nominees can't vote because if the HOH can't vote, then, like, it has to be balanced out. The HOH can't vote because that's how they break ties. Like, it's like logic.
Yeah. I think, again, like, their focus is not on game mechanics, which I think is actually the thing that they really do get right in terms of, you know, trying to mimic regular Big Brother. That nobody focuses on game mechanics, unfortunately.
Well, that's why we're here. But, we care about the mechanics.
Yeah, we're here to pick it apart. So episode six, there's going to be another food challenge. They get $10 every time they catch a ball that rolls across a thing. The second I saw this, I was like, this is kind of a cool thing. They have to catch the ball. I was thinking, like, okay, basically they have to like take shifts and watch this all the time because they never know when the ball will come. I thought that was what they were going to go with, but no, instead it's that a big alarm is going to blare out. And it's going to tell a specific person that they need to catch the ball, which I think had its own merits, but I would have preferred my own version. So they have to run out and catch the ball. Every time they catch it, they get $10 of extra food money. And this is going to lead to a couple of humorous situations where they're running for it. They're in a towel or they're like trying to catch it. They're making a dive for it. They can't catch it because they're terrible at catching things. I thought this, like most things with Big Brother Australia, I found this to be entertaining. Like, I thought that this was like 70% of it was like good entertaining stuff and 30% of it was like, it was too much of it. It could have been cut down. But overall, I thought this was kind of fun.
Maybe that's the theme of Australian TV shows. That nearly there. Nearly. Just 30% more.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need 30% more airtime. We need 30% more quality. You know what I mean? It's like, speaking of the tea thing, before the sleep deprivation challenge, that's what I'm going to call it. I'm not going to call it the shopping task. I'm going to call it the sleep deprivation challenge.
Can I just say, I was like very confused. So they haven't caught much money. They haven't caught many balls yet. And so they're like, we're going to stay up. We're going to sleep outside so that we're prepared to catch the balls when they come. But not everyone slept outside.
Yeah.
And so I was like, what is the purpose of anybody sleeping outside if there are still some people all the way in the bedroom? Because obviously, Big Brother is only going to call the people far. They're going to call the person that's already right there. They're going to call the person that has to run and get it. And so if not everybody's outside, there's no purpose in anybody being outside. It doesn't make sense.
I can like almost see like the circuits in your brain like malfunctioning from like all the irrationality on the show. It's like trying to understand like chaos. It's like yeah. Half of you are sleeping outside, but half of you are inside, which defeats the whole purpose. Because the producers are just gonna call the people inside, which is what they did.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, what's the point? Why are we doing? Why are we here, Tara? Why are we calling you on this map?
So they only get a little bit. They only get like about half of the money that they could have gotten. And now it's time to pick the groceries, to pick the food. And the cooks are going to go do that. And that's Zoe and Garth.
Oh boy.
And of course, Angela wants to make sure, hey, you're going to get my tea, right? You're going to get my tea? Yes? The tea's coming. Okay. You're getting the tea? All right. And Zoe and Garth, they go off. I don't know why they need to be in a separate room to do this. I don't know why they can't do it in front of everyone. right. But they go off with their tablet and they're going through the food. And Zoe says, we got green tea. We don't need anything. We don't need any other tea. And Garth's like, huh? As what about Angela? She can get over it.
What's wrong with Angela? I guess
she doesn't have enough tea.
Yeah, that she doesn't have enough tea. And I guess in my notes I wrote Survivor Marquesas is not the only season with a passive aggressive Zoe. Because it's like the tea thing is that my issue with the whole tea gate of it all is that firstly, Angela caught her balls. Like when her name was called, she caught it. Mm-hmm. There were multiple people who dropped them. Like, including Casey and, like, Sophie. And, like, Casey is the one who says, oh, could you bring green tea? And it's, like, one comment. Like, just one. She says, oh, maybe green tea. And then you have Angela who says it, like, four times. You remember the tea, right? You remember the tea bags, right? Remember the tea? And Zoe's then saying, we're going to get green tea. And it's, like, we're talking about a woman, Angela, who... in the beginning of episode 6 is smuggling tea in her bra, and when she drops a tea bag in the toilet, she fishes it out because okay. She says, you don't want to waste tea. And it's like, I guess like from like a medical perspective, if you boil the water at 100 degrees, it kills the bacteria, whatever. But the point is, she's desperate.
So.
She's desperate for tea. And everyone in that, even even Matt in the DR says that, oh, Angela doesn't need anything. She just needs the tea. That's only $3 for a whole box. And they had 190 in budget. She just needs one of these things, right? A tea bag. English breakfast. And Zoe, nope. And we know why she said no. It's because she doesn't like her.
Mm-hmm. She needed to prevent Angela from getting her super secret weapon power of tea. If she had the tea, she would have won this competition. I think that's basically confirmed.
Ah, yes, it's like the power of the tea. It's like a mana, like we said.
Yes, exactly. So Angela, not pleased. This doesn't really seem to blow up much, other than Angela. Like everyone was like, oh, Angela's going to be so mad. And she was like upset, but it wasn't like,
well,
crazy.
This is a good time, I guess, like to talk about like the race element of it all. And I think this is like a good segue to talk about it. And I know we're all fun and games here, but I'm going to get a bit more serious and talk quietly. Okay. So as you said, Taryn, Angela had a pretty, she said she was upset. And in the DR, she said, oh, I'm like furious. But when she first found out, she said, I could cry. And she didn't have a confrontation about it. She didn't flip out. She was more sad and disheartened. But I took notes on this. Let's look at the list of how people react, like talked about Angela. So firstly, we have Matt saying giddy. Matt, who we've not seen before, he's the bald guy, by the way. But he's giddy. He's one of the good people. He's saying, oh, there's going to be a blow up. And then in the DR, he's like, there's going to be World War III. And then Like, you have Casey who's saying, that's not good. Oh, it's going to be so scary. It's going to be so scary. It made me, it was, look, the music was funny. And I think thankfully, like, Angela has like a good sense of humor about it. And she's able to, like, in the DL be like, this is like, they came for the queen. And she has like, she knows what show she's on. But I felt a little uncomfortable because some of the ways, like, essentially the good people, the white people, was like, Garth was in this conversation too, where they were saying, oh, it's so scary. She's going to blow up. She's going to, like, threaten us. She's going to, like, explode. It felt very Kimmy Shaker Bottle, where they'll be like, oh, like, it's like a big black scary woman. And let's make this very clear. Zoe instigated this. She knowingly didn't get black tea. Even Garth, when he... sorry, I need some tea. I'm spilling the tea too, but Garth even says, when the two of them are in the green room, says, oh, like, we should get black tea. Like, Angela's going to be sad. And Zoe said, well, like, we, like, some people just need to drink less. Like, we, like, it's a bit too much. Casey, even Casey, the one who said green tea, is saying, Angela cares about tea way more than I do. So you have Zoe, who willingly instigated this, because in her own words, she was not happy that she was nominated. But the rest of the house guests are talking about how Angela's the problem and how she's going to blow this out of control, when essentially you have a case of one house guest, like, poking the bear and then being like, oh no, the bear's going to, like, lash out and be all scary, threatening, angry black woman. It felt a little microaggression-y to me. And let's call it out as we see it. Laura washed a dish and touched a binder and was scary and threatening. Alan was targeted for being sneaky, but in Garth's, both Garth's exit press, like, not, you know, Garth's interviews and Alan's exit press, apparently Garth and Alan were in the same, like, groups interview process. Garth's heard that Alan said, I'm going to find this very funny slash sad. Garth's heard Alan say, I'm going to play to win. And he's like, he's going playing to win. He's going to kill all of us. He's playing to win. How dare you? How dare you? And I'm noticing that a lot of, like, people are saying, but Garth is, like, a character. He's, like, he's a minority too. Being a, I can say this as an LGBTQ Asian, being gay doesn't inoculate you from your white privilege. It just doesn't. Kind of like how it doesn't make, like, doesn't, like, magically make me, like, not sexist. Like, I can still, like, I can recognize my male privilege, for example. And Garth, like, he's aligned with the white people. Like, sorry, I didn't say white people. The good people. That was an accident, I swear. He's aligned with the good people and he's essentially enabling them, even though he's at the bottom of the food chain. Like, Daniel and Talia, they're going to keep Shane and Xavier and Casey over Garth, like they are. But Garth did their dirty work for them because Alan is playing to win and he's sneaky. In episode two, he said, Alan's really nice and he talks to everyone. We got to cut off the head of the snake. In fact, in episode two, Garth talked about snakes so much that I think Nick Iadanza would have gotten a stroke if he watched this episode. He's like, oh no, what am I doing? This is too much for me. And it's even more galling when you look at episode two, when Kieran was the original target. Kieran was the one who went around in episode one strategizing, being paranoid, campaigning, does the apology tour. Alan's only thing that he did is that he's, like, friendly and he went to the outsiders and said, hey, like, I hope you guys are feeling welcome. But if you have two known variables of a white guy who has knowingly been strategic and strategized versus the Asian guy who said he wants to play to win and that's it, but yet the one who's a snake and a strategist is the Asian, and that doesn't play into your thought process about Asians in these shows, questionable. So bomb. They were like, apparently they targeted him for being aloof, different. One of them said, maybe he knows karate. Actually, he's Korean.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oof. Oh, there's a lot of oofs. I went through Garth's Instagram. He has, like, cosplayed for Halloween as Frida Kahlo and as that National Geographic Middle Eastern girl with, like, full hijab. Like,
oh, boy.
Yeah. And 7 weeks ago, like, I have links. I have received. I don't believe in being petty, but I do believe in calling it out as I see it as an Australian. Mm-hmm. And if Sobong is, like, exotic or different or, like, physically fit, and but his physicality is being described in like a ninja-y, like Bruce Lee type of way. And now Angelo's being like preemptively described as scary, explosive, like aggressive, when really Angela is like, she has a personality. But to me, her personality is more like Olivia Reimer from Big Brother Canada 6. She's like big skincare energy, where she's like, so I'm like, I'm an inadvertent bitch. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, very Olivia. I love Olivia. But like, it's like very like, she takes care of herself. She's like, you know, cares about her nails. She even says, the only blood I only, I don't like blood. The only red I have is on my nails. Like, she's very Olivia, but the way people are talking about her is like, she's this big bomb about it wealth.
Even on her way, like at the end of the episode, after she's been voted out, she's heading out. I don't remember who it was. It might have been Zoe. Somebody makes the comment like, oh, she's going to like go and like grab all the tea bags, or like she's going to do something crazy. And she's just walking out the door. Yeah. Like
like, people of color are not perfect. I'll admit that. Like, I have my own flaws. Sometimes I ramble like the Heisenberg letting off gas. I get it. None of us are perfect, but all we're asking for is for the opportunity to play the games that we want to without implicit biases being placed on us. We just, when we talk about things like systemic racism, it's about it's not only about racists, but about racism and about like the system that enables people to certain types of people like Kieran to get multiple free chances. It's like he skates by, no matter how many mistakes he makes. But a person of color makes one mistake once and then it's game over. I read the straight tweet regarding Black Lives Matter. By the way, that's important. Black lives do matter. Trans lives matter. It's Pride Month. Everybody go out and support Black lives, like Black trans lives. But the tweet from BLM said that when a police officer pulls over a white person, that's called a mistake. When they pull over a Black person, it's called a crime. Here, for Kieran, it's a mistake, and he's able to survive. But for someone like an Alan or a Laura or a Subong or an Angela, it's like, even if they're not the instigator and have things instigated to them, like the tea of it all, they're somehow the problem and they're not given the opportunities. And we have to work twice as hard for half of what they get. And it's really sad when we even have minorities like God, he's LGBTQ and he's one of the loudest voices. Like, he took out Alan. He's so like anti-Angela. And I'm noticing some people on Twitter, like white straight people. I get it. It's like, it's really hard to like, you know, talk about God, who's also a minority, and try to like critique it. So I'll do it for you as a member of this LGBTQ and as also a person of color. Intersectionality is a thing. These different identities overlap. And we, as if you're a minority in any way, we are all affected. We might be affected differently, but we're all affected by the same systems of oppression. So for Goth and essentially like going after people of color so hard, to me, that is enabling. That's what it is, essentially, because do we really think that like he's going to win this game after Angela's gone? No. And I'm going to use Andy Heron as an example. Okay. Some people come after him because he's like, oh, like, how dare you be in a house? And like, you know, like, you have to play your game. Like, all they talk about Tommy Bracco, right? Like, you're a gay person. You have no obligation to, like, work with people of color or whatever. Now, okay, we get it. The line for various people in these social strategy games is different. Some people are, like, the good people. They're like, I will never cross that line. I will not lie. I will never blah, 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 blah. And for other people, they're like, yeah, I will, like, you know, make up a dead grandma. But the reason why I have less of an issue with Andy than with Garth is that, and I wrote this in my notes because it's important. And I need to like make sure that it's not, I'm phrasing this correctly. Andy was not on the bottom of an alliance. Garth was. And not only that, when Andy, say, would keep his mouth shut, I don't say I would have done that. If I were in his position, I don't think I would have necessarily done that. But there's a difference between Andy being there, not actively like adding gasoline to the fire like Garth is, just keeping your mouth shut, arguably being complicit, but at least he's not an instigator of it, and like actively trying to play his game of like, for example, Andy would try to keep the two sides of the house equal. He did work with like the mom squad, like Helen and Alyssa. If this is more like if Garth eliminated Helen and Alyssa in week two, This would be like if Andy's like, Helen and Alyssa are snakes. They are going to explode on us. Helen and Alyssa need to go right now. Like, can you see the difference that I'm trying to point out? It's like, Garth is not only complicit, he's like enabling it. And I think there's sometimes like in Big Brother, as fans, we get heated. And we like take, like, it's a very like, I think, we take our reality TV very seriously. And sometimes I think we will like attack Andy with the same like velocity that we would attack Garth. And I think that line between complicity and like enabling often gets forgotten about. And I do think it's a spectrum. And even though I personally would not have done what Andy did, I also don't think Andy should be held like accountable for the sins of his other house guests. Well, I do think Garth should be, because we are even seeing in this episode that he is. And I really feel like he got lucky that there are no live feeds here, because like I totally see him doing like a great full circle. Like, there are so many scenes where the good people are in a circle and they're saying that, oh, we're so grateful. They even have a gratitude circle at the end of the episode. Like, I'm like, oh boy. There's probably a lot of stuff on the cutting room floor that we did not see. And just to say one more thing about Garth, because I could come for him more, but I'm trying to be more of a Melissa than a Brent here. I love you, Brent, by the way. He and I talk on Twitter. But Garth also doesn't wash his hands. And I know that's a really petty thing for me to bring up, but he goes to the toilet and he doesn't wash his hands. And he does it a few times. And I'm like, I feel like I'm Daniel Reyes. Go wash your hands.
Yes, he's pulling a Jerry.
Oh my God. It's like, wash your damn hands. We're in a pandemic. Yes. Wash your hands. Like, and that's like totally separate from like the microaggression of it all. And I'm like, anyway, that's a dirty. Mm-hmm. Wash your hands.
Well, yeah. I thank you for all of that. Great points. I also wanted to ask you about
the Australia stuff too, if you want.
Yes, Australia in particular, because that is, you know, you guys do have a different culture and perspective than we might have in the U.S. if we're used to these conversations in specifically revolving around the U.S. Australia has its own set of problems. I take it.
Okay. Well, difficult question. But I have done my best to prepare for it, because if you want to be an Australian correspondent, you have to deal with the Australia of it all. Okay. Australia has had an interesting reputation, where internationally our reputation is more progressive than in the reality in the country. So I'm Australian. Like, I have the passport. I am Australian. And in April, a Tinder date texted me, like, Ching Chong, like, who milked the cow? Like, a Tinder date. And he was like, oh, it's a joke. And, like, I was offended, because that's a racial epithet against Asians. And that was, like, in, like, April, like, in the pandemic. And he said it's a joke and whatever, but that's the thing. At a supermarket, for example, I was taught by, like, a lady who was saying, you should be ashamed for what your people have done to the world. Like, the pandemic is your fault. Up until the early 2000s, we've had politicians on national television saying phrases such as, stop the Asian invasion, stop the boats, Australia is being invaded and swamped by Asians. And that was like 2006. To put that in context, I believe Barack Obama is about to become president in this decade. It's like, this is also like, you know, like, this is also like after Britney Spears released her like three albums and Hit Me Baby One More Time. We're not talking about the 60s or 70s. We're talking about
that's your frame of reference.
Well, I am like queer, so Britney Spears.
Fair.
Like this is like not that far away. In terms of black people, our indigenous black people in Tasmania, which is a state, were all genocided. We don't talk about that. People overseas don't talk about it. There's a practice called blackbirding. That's what they call it officially in the textbooks and in the official Australian government's like policy, but it's called slavery. Blackbirding refers to a practice in the colonial era where Australia would essentially go to like islands like Vanuatu, Fiji, Samoa, kidnap people who live there, bring them to Queensland and enslave them to work on sugarcane farms. But how they call it is blackbirding. They don't call it slavery, even though indigenous people and black people and people from those islands say, no, it's slavery. Take that out of your textbooks. But blackbirding, look, America has its fair share of people who would say the civil rights was about states' rights. But here, a lot of people don't even know about blackbatting. A lot of people here don't talk about how up until 1960, we didn't give Indigenous Australians the right to vote. I'm not even making that up. The referendum, and I'm going to get the exact date so like people like know about this. So up until like we had a referendum, Aboriginal Australians did not have a right to vote. They weren't considered official citizens in the 60s. Okay, I have the date, 1967, the Australian referendum. And the people who voted in that referendum were white people. So essentially, it was white people saying, the people who originally lived here, we will finally give you the right to, like, to vote.
How magnanimous.
Oh, we're good people. We're such good people.
They're good people.
How dare you want tea? How dare you? How dare you want black tea and not green tea? You will take your green tea and sit down and be happy with it. Up until the early 2000s, our prime minister, our own government, did not issue an apology. Like, it was a big political thing when our leader said, I am sorry, those three words, to the Indigenous people. And what's shocking is a lot of people were angry about that. It was very, like, Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter. People were saying, how dare you say I'm sorry? We have nothing to be sorry about. They would even say, we helped the people here. We colonized it. We settled it. Even our constitution, like our constitution is your guys' like version of the Declaration of Independence, doesn't mention Indigenous people. It doesn't. And up until the landmark legal case of Mabo, which is at our High Court, which is your Supreme Court, until the Mabo decision, Australia was officially settled, not colonized or invaded. The idea up until that like landmark legal case was there was no one here. It was terra nullius, empty land, and Australia built something out of nothing. If you add on top of that as a layer, the culture of Australia's tall poppy syndrome, right? And this very like idea of mateship, and everyone gets a fair go, and this like almost like hero worship of footy legends, like sports, like, oh, you're an AFL star? Oh my God, that's so great. This like hyper-masculine, very white culture. And you layer that on top of the historical negation of like people of color's rights, it becomes this very interesting brew of Australians being, we're relaxed, we're chill, we're such like good people. People of color protesting, making a big deal, being un-Australian. You're like talking too much. Just like relax, take your shoes off, go to the beach, be like Chris Hemsworth, like take your surfboard out. You need to like be less Australian. The word that gets tossed around here a lot is un-Australian, which probably is like going, oh boy, like kind of like very McCarthyist in terms of its tenor. But look, I think America's issue regarding like everything regarding the Black Lives Matter protests are, I think, very much intertwined with police brutality. And thankfully here, our police force, because we have no guns here, remember? That's one thing we did. We have no guns. Yeah. It means that the laws regarding like when you can fire and whatnot are more stringent. However, we are not perfect. We still have police brutality. We have police officers who are mainly white, who are imprisoning Aboriginal people. For example, I wrote a paper on this. Although Indigenous people constitute less than 10% of our population, I believe like more than 20% of our prison populations are Indigenous. And those stats, like, they don't lie. And that's why people here also protested during Black Lives Matter. That's why BIPOC is becoming like a new term, Black and Indigenous people of color. And it's really upsetting and sad that a lot of Australians, when they read about this, will be like, it's an American issue. It's an American thing. We're not like that. We're good people. We don't have that here. We're all made shit. Everything is fine, even though in Australia, in Survivor, for example, do you know many black people on there? Are there a lot of Asians on there? Are there a lot of gay people on there? Or is that show cast like as white bread? Maybe the reason why we're talking about this on Big Brother Australia is that at least they cast a lot of minorities or the white people to all vote out in a row. Maybe the reason why it's not in Shannon, poor Shannon Gus hadn't had to have this very difficult conversation is because they don't have enough non-white people for the show to like just all vote out in a row. Because, oh boy, like I would not want to be Shannon if she's like, so why did all five people of color get voted out one after another?
Which, by the way, if you haven't noticed, is what happened here. Angela won two HOHs to keep herself safe. But otherwise, at the first opportunity, every single person of color was, you know, one by one evicted from this house.
And she was even like mentioned in episode 4 by Casey as a potential nominee. Casey's like, Angela, so threatening. We have to nominate her with Marissa. And I love that you called out, compared Angela to Casey, because in my notes, I was saying, Marissa is the one I stand. If anything happens to Angela, I'm like, I love Marissa, right? Okay. Let me explain my love for Marissa. Marissa is a 61-year-old where, demographically speaking, she should not like, you know what I mean? But here we have a lovely lady who was an aerobics instructor in the 60s.
Who's like, I forgot about that.
I know. Oh, she's, like, she's a triplet.
The clips.
And she's like happily, like, giddily exercising. And she, she's like Rennie tendencies, where she dropped out of the hand holding challenge because I did 6 hours. I'm proud of myself. Woo! And she's like random moments of like just being like very like just a little quirky. And her biggest sin is that she's associated with Angela, but she doesn't care. Marissa's like, I don't care. Angela's my friend. And in her voting confessional, she's consistent. She's like, yeah, Angela's my friend. And she doesn't even say friend. She says alliance. And I'm like, yes, the 61-year-old is like, knows what she's like playing. Because even we see in episode 4 when Marissa and Angela have the army conversation, Marissa says, we need to form a counter-alliance. That lady is switched on. And between that and her aerobics background and how she wears like a lot of random sparkly like outfits, and I noticed in some episodes, like it'll be that, like in day 8, she'll have like 4 outfit changes, and I'm like, I love you, queen. You're just changing your outfits because you can, and you don't care about the good people because she's old enough that she's like, yeah, I don't need to be friends with them. I'm just gonna hang out with people I want to hang out with. Angela's 37. I don't want to hang out with some 21-year-old. I'm just going to be friends with who I want to be friends with. And for me, if Angela is Kesa, Marissa is Janelle. And I'm like waiting for when Marissa wins the HOH. And it's going to be, give me that key, bitch. I think it's going to be amazing. That should be a hashtag, Marissa Pissing. I'm calling you right now.
Who's the Howie then?
Daryl. Sarah Anna needs.
Or is it Kieran, maybe? I don't know.
I think Kieran is like more of the James Ryan in that he's trying to like...
He is the James, but like...
Not very well.
He's fulfilling two roles. He's James, but Howie trying to be James.
Yes, I think that. And Hannah, to me, is very like Rachel, like BB6 in that. Hannah, I think you would like, because we can talk at the end of this episode when we talk about like the vote breakdown and the voting confessionals. I think once you find out what Hannah said in her voting confessional, you would like her more because of the... We already liked her in episode 3 when like Talia just hates her for no reason. Like no reason. And then Hannah, when like she finds out that she's in danger, she's like nice to Sobong. She's like a genuinely good person, where she's not like, I'm a good person. She just is a good person. You know someone's a good person when they don't have to declare that they're a good person.
Exactly. And that's what I was saying too, like the other week when it was like, you know, Marissa was saying it for her that like, oh, they're coming after you because they're jealous of you. Like, but then she, even after she finds out, she never says, they're just jealous of me. She's too down to earth for that. She's like, that's, I'm not gonna touch it. Like, whatever.
Like there's a reason why we love us, like our Australian sovereign six. Cause yeah, they're all like messy and they're targeting each other. Kieran's a mess, but I still like Kieran because he's not indignant. He's not hypocritical. He doesn't have that BB6 friendship energy. Same with Marissa, same with Angela, same with Hannah, Sarah. Yeah. Their biggest sin is that they're playing. And they're being strategic. And the friendship is all, how dare you strategize against me? How dare you? You should just lay down and let me buy green tea. And
is Sarah the Sarah?
Sarah's the tiny one. She's the ninth. Sarah's the Danny. Danny's the Sarah. Danny's the Sarah who left Tilly.
Okay.
Sarah's like, she's... I like her, but I feel like her main role in this season is she's the one that Big Brother keeps torturing. Like, Big Brother during the sleep deprivation task is like, keeps like, remember when they called her twice when she was in the shower? She's in the shower. She goes out.
It felt a little cruel to
me. Yeah, and then she goes back and they do it again. And then with the knees and how she's having a nervous breakdown. But like, poor girl. But I like her. She's voted not with the majority. every time that she was an HOH. But people seem to like her, which I think is important. I think edit-wise, she is going far because no one's mentioning her like name as a target. Like they would say Marissa, Angela, Kieran, maybe Hannah, but Sarah's like oh, and Sarah's that too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we get to the HOH competition.
Yes.
And they have to unspool some rope and then re-spool some rope. Not a lot to mention here other than the fact that Angela, without her tea, is incapable of completing this competition. But Ian is going to do very well here, and he's going to end up winning the HOH competition. And he ends up putting Marissa, Chad, and Angela up for elimination. And now this is where I feel like they have been protecting Ian in the edit, where I feel like my read on this is that if this were a Big Brother US season, Ian would have been somebody that people liked at first. But then as they watched him, they would have been like, he's just a lackey for
the good people,
the cool kids, the good people.
They're not cool. They don't deserve to be cool. They're the good people.
Okay. They don't have their cool kid club card. He's just like a spineless follower. Like that's what the live feeders would be saying about Ian if they were able to watch the live feeds of Ian. But instead we're watching the edited version. And I think he's great. I think he seems like a sweetheart. I would probably be the person like, hey guys, lay off of Ian. He's doing his best. But I think that they're trying to do their best to protect him. And they're trying to, like, because even you can watch, like, in the beginning of the episode, he's like, oh, my good buddy Dan, he's like my best buddy in here, we're great friends. Later in the episode, Dan is like, I didn't even have to do it myself, I unleashed my hound on him or on her. I don't think this is an equal partnership relationship going on here.
It kind of reminded me of the Vanessa Steve dynamic a bit, the Dan Ian thing. Actually, it's a Dan and Ian. We already have a Dan and Ian on another show.
What's that? How about like a Jack and Ovi?
I see that too. I see like the Jack Ovi thing more of like Kieran, and how much Kieran will just rat out a lot of stuff to that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because he just wants to fit in. Like, let's be honest. That's the main reason why Kieran is leaking more than a broken tap. It's because he feels like scared. And I honestly don't hate him for it. I'm not coming for him the same way I came for Garth, because with Kieran, I think he's not participating in the microaggressions. Like, the way he describes people is not the same. Like, it's not the same level of like self-righteousness. And a lot of it seems to be like, he's 21. He's a young guy who feels vulnerable because he was nominated twice and he's trying to save his own skin. So yeah, I feel like he's kind of like Ovi in that I never really faulted Ovi for how much he would trust Jack more than Nicole. I think when you are in the situation like that, where it's so like combustible, you're scared. And when you're scared, we can't really, like, I feel like if we're trying to blame like a Kieran or an Ovi, it feels a little victim blaming. But I do think that's an unfortunate situation. I think with Ian, it's more of a case where in terms of the house layout. So I feel like in a live feed update, you would be like, here's the layout of the house. So the layout of the house right now is we have team good people. So we have Dan, Zoe, Matt, Baldhead, Casey has a four. Talia used to be with them, so that's four. Xavier is kind of with them. I think at this point, he's like kind of there. Garth thinks he's with them, but he's like on the outside of the onion. And then you have Shane. We have no idea. For Shane, let's just say question mark. Like, we have no idea what
he strikes me as just like cool dad that's just hanging out.
Like a Kevin in Big Brother Canada 9. Sorry, Big Brother 9.
Maybe a little bit,
And so we have like those people. Then we have Ian, who's, I think, like on the bottom, like kind of like Garth's position. But I do think Ian is more valued than Garth is, because I think Garth has rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And he's been called like a gossiper and a rabble rouser. While Ian's like, oh, he's so lovable. He's so like, he's like a, he's no threat. And then on the other side, we have like Angela, Marissa, Sarah, Hannah, who are all on the outs. Kieran is trying to play the middle and is desperate, but he can't. And the edit is very much showing us a case where Ian has a very close bond with Angela. Like, we see in episode 4 when he's missing his Patricia, who got more time than Shane. I'm not going to let that go. Patricia the spider got mentioned more than Shane did. Angela comforts Ian. Like when Ian's the one who's sad, Angela goes and like helps him out. Then we see like Ian saying in like DRs in all three episodes that he likes Angela. Then you also see that Ian is like, he bonds with Dan. Like when Dan's like, yeah, tell me about the spiders. And that whole scene is so interesting where Ian says, Dan is basically my best mate. And in foreshadowing, Ian says like about the fish, I reckon they jostle around for dominance. Dan says, just like in here. And then it cuts to like Dan saying, I don't care. Which kind of reminded me of, do you remember Connor from Australian Survivor 1? He's the guy who burnt
his hand. Yes.
Yeah, it's a bit Connery, where I think Ian and Connor are both likable guys. I think they're very sweet guys. But Connor didn't really he wasn't making a big move, you know what I mean? He wasn't like a Sierra Easton. Mm-hmm. He's voting out his mom. He's very much trying to just stay low, not ruffle feathers, because when you're a young, not hyper macho person, then you just want to in that sort of Australian mateship culture, you feel intimidated because Australian culture worships sportiness. Like it just does, and sportsmanship and all that. You just want to fit in. So he's trying to fit in with Dan and Chad and Sophie are very much with the good people, but notice how we didn't talk about them at all because they're just shielding them. I even have in my notes in that big scene, you know, when Angela calls out that other alliance and they're like, oh, the other alliance are like, so it's like Casey, Zoe, and the boys. So you see Garth there, we see Matt there, we see Dan there. Chad's also there in the background. It's like they framed it in a certain way. And then, but we also see Chad and Sophie, they're kind of playing the middle where the next scene is the one where Sarah and Hannah saying, oh, what Zoe did was 100% mean. It was a bit they said it's about the nominations thing. And guess who was also there? Sophie and Chad. There's when I on the rewatch, when I was looking out for Sophie and Chad, it was very interesting to me that they would often be in group conversations with the Angela army. But then they'd also one of them or two of them would be in talking with the good people. And it's and I think that makes sense because they're day two people, Chad and Sophie. So they would have that bond with Sarah and Hannah and them, but they would also, they're pretty and they're beautiful.
Yeah. And when Chad talks about I love Angela, I don't want to vote Angela out. He seems to have a good relationship with her, and he doesn't vote that way. Yeah. So,
they're very much in the best position in many ways because they're in the middle of everything and they're just doing, which is, I think, good Big Brother gameplay, which is being nice to everyone, floating. They're doing what Garth thinks he's doing.
Yeah.
And to bring it, that's the layout of the house. Thank you very much. But Ian, very much his move reminded me of Steve targeting Jackie and Meg during the double eviction, where Jackie had built a personal connection with Steve. But Steve's reason for targeting Jackie wasn't about personal bonds. It was about okay, this is what my alliance wants, and I need to make a statement.
Yeah, what can I get away with as well?
Yeah, how do I prove myself? So
yeah. So it doesn't seem like there's much in the way of campaigning here. It seems like it's a given that Angela is going to be voted out. It seems like she tries to pull it's as if she couldn't get herself more popular with the audience. She's going to say, hey, we can't let this be a boys' club. We need to get the women together. It's not going to work though.
She's BB Twitter, let's be honest. She's the incarnation of Twitter.
Including her love of tea.
Yes, she spills all the tea.
Yes.
I loved her, by the way.
Spill it.
When she said,
she will not spill the
she
tea.
She must spill the tea.
She will only drink the tea.
You must first buy the tea, then spill the tea. And I just loved her in DR when she said, who even drinks green tea? We are not Japanese.
I didn't get that.
Oh, it's really funny. I found it funny personally because I've been to Japan. They love matcha there. And I just found the way she said it so matter-of-factly. I think that's the thing we love about Angela. In her mind, she's not playing a character. That's just who she is. The thing about the dogs not speaking English, she said that very matter-of-factly. It wasn't a yelly DR. Just her saying, the fear of the unknown. They don't speak English. Or they'll say, well, who even drinks green tea in this house? We are not Japanese. Like, in her mind, like, these things are things she genuinely believes. And we love her. There's no artifice there. She's just a real person.
Well, Angela is going to be evicted here. Or not really. but she's going to be... all the votes are going to fall on Angela. She's going to start to walk out the door. But Big Brother chimes in. They said, hold on. You are not leaving. You are going to the control room. And your time in this house is not over. You're going to get to watch and play around with the house guests. This is very Big Brother Canada 4 fake double eviction. This is not a fake double eviction. It's just a fake eviction. Also, super sketchy to me that this is a pre-recorded show, that this twist was not announced ahead of time. And, oh, look, it happens to be our star is evicted. Could you imagine if this was like just pre-planned, they always were going to do it on this eviction. If this had been the Danny eviction, Danny is now the star of your show in the control room. We're doing promos of Danny is now in control. Watch to see what Danny does.
Danny and wouldn't a few bubbles.
Yeah, wouldn't have happened.
Look,
they were waiting for a Kieran or Angela or Ian or Daniel eviction before they were going to let this happen.
And you can tell because there was a teapot in the control room and the camera like, focused on it too. It's like they even gave a tea. It's like they know. That's how you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very like Kelsey Levita. To their defense, production's offense, I will say though that 20 house guests, 20 episodes, they have to have one non-elimination. Like we see this in Australian Survivor 2 as well. Like they will always have like one or two, like like Annalise and Tara are both voted out, but wait, nope, they're not. It's a tribe swap. Like, there's always one or two of them going on, but you're right, Taryn, in that the timing of it is what was interesting.
Yeah. I will say like there's such little gameplay to care about in this show that I'm like I guess I'll take it. Like if it means Angela gets to stay on my screen, fine.
They know she's the rating gold, and they also know she's like the last person of color. We can't let her go out.
Right. Like the fake double eviction is perhaps my most hated moment in. Like Big Brother production trying to do twists, like the worst twist they've ever done. So the fact that I'm like, whatever on this.
There's no Mitch in the house. I think that's the issue.
Shows you how much apathy I have for the gameplay in this season.
It's like a house of Maddies and no Mitches.
Truly. So that's where we are in week two. We're going to head into week three next week, and we're going to see what Angela has in store for the rest of the house guests. Well, I imagine she's coming back at some
100%
point.
She's coming back. I think I think even the promos that are they're airing here, it's like it's obvious she's coming back. And it's to me, it is so Big Brother Canada 4, like down to the T, like the feeds and everything. They're not even hiding it at this point. They're like, yep, she gets to watch in here and whatever, and then she's going to come back. I'm more curious about whether they're going to eliminate one more person and do the whole, like go full Big Brother 4 or like half Big Brother 4 where she comes back after a week. That's, I think, where it gets interesting. Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll find out.
Next week. Stay tuned. But I love that exit. Right, well, should we talk about that? Just the gratitude circle.
Oh, yeah. The editing back and forth was good. There's no way that was happening at the same time in reality. But it was a good juxtaposition there of them being so happy and, poor Angela. We feel she's a great person. Not as good as us, but she's a great person, as she walks away with the and again, this is like 5 minutes of Angela walking down a hallway.
Yeah. Like she like kept like dragging a suitcase and I'm like, does your suitcase not have wheels on it? She like dragged it. And like, it was like very Liz in Big Brother 17 with the trash bag. Like falls over. She keeps dragging it. And I love how the circle of gratitude they were talking about her as if she died. Like, we dearly beloved, we are here to mourn Angela. She was a good person. We will not forget about her. And meanwhile, she's like, yes, thank you, Jesus.
It's good. It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Should we talk about the vote?
Okay, what did we have in the vote confessionals?
Firstly, everybody stop dragging Kieran. He voted Chad. Like, so so the votes were, so there were two votes on Marissa, four votes on Chad, and everybody else voted
Yeah,
Angela,
it was,
right?
Yeah, eight to four to two.
Yeah, before, yeah, the, so Kieran was one of the votes for Chad, and he said very, he just said straight up, I have a day one alliance with Marissa and Angela, which makes me mad. It makes me mad a little bit because I'm thinking, so if you're aligned with Angela and Marissa, why did you throw them under the bus?
To get out of the firing line, I guess.
But anyway, yes, I do think it came out of fear. I think that's the thing. I don't think it was like a strategic thing. I think a lot of the things Kieran did, he had no, he did not realize that he was playing with lunatics or crazy people. Like when he told Garth that, he had no idea it was going to spiral out of control. So he votes for Chad. Angela also votes for Chad. Makes sense. Close to Marissa. Hannah is the fourth Chad voter, and you'll find this interesting that she says, originally, I was going to vote for Angela because that's where the house is going. But strategically speaking, Chad has more numbers. Chad is connected to that other side of the house, and I know what he's doing. And even if I vote against the majority, I want to make my loyalties clear. I'm like, yes, Hannah, thank you. And I love that you use the word strategically twice. You don't care about the other people. We knew we liked you. You're tall and beautiful and you're loyal to your people. Because it's very much to me like that day one versus like the intruders thing is still like an undercurrent. They're still very
they just
much
have to get rid of the people of color first. Then they can continue.
People of color plus Marissa. But like, yeah, like, so like the day two alliance, like still a thing, I think. Like, Sarah, Hannah, Sophie and Chad playing in the middle. The Marissa votes were Sarah and Chad. Chad is great. He says, I don't want to vote for Angela because I like her. He says that. And he says that he wants to work with her. And he says, he implies that he knows Angela's going home, but he still wants to make it a matter of principle. And Sarah's the other vote for Marissa, where he says that she trusts Angela more. But specifically, she says here that Marissa could be a threat in some of these challenges. And I recognize that.
That's actually fair. Some of these.
And yeah, and all the other Angela votes, like, we don't need to go through them. It's a lot of, she's a huge threat and she broke promises. But I think now that we have this information, I think it makes the lay of the house a bit more clear, especially the fact that Chad, oh, also I should mention Sophie's voting confessional. She was a bit reluctant to vote Angela out, like tone-wise. And it was very much like, oh, I don't like that I'm doing this. And I know I could be reading into that, but I think the combination of the vote tally and the who's interacting with who came in at the house of what day, I think says, and with all of that information put together, we can kind of see what's going on in that. I think the people most in danger next week are like Sarah, and Marissa's in a lot of danger. Kieran's with them. And then you have like Ian and Garth and the good people.
Yeah. Makes sense. You know, I think Angela, and like I said, I think edit wise, I feel like these good people are going to be in for some trouble. I think, if they were all going to make it far, then we'd know more than one of their names.
Well, that's why it's crazy in that they're talking about, like Zoe says that, oh, like if I win nominator, I want to like my, it's very obvious to me. I'm going to put up Marissa, Angela and Kieran. And we just need to win the next three and get them all out. And then the people who deserve to get to the end can go to the end. It's very like grateful. We're just going to win all the challenges until like jury. And it's like all the people who deserve to be there are going to get there. Talia said the same thing. And I'm thinking to myself, this is why we like Big Brother. They're not going to win every single challenge until then. Somebody's going to like be the wheel, the spanner in the works. Let's pray. Should we go through questions though? So Brittany, so at BBSassy19, she asks, how long until we start seeing people make actual solidified alliances, or will they continue to avoid being too gamey? That's
Brittany. Honestly, it feels like we're never really, I think the only gamey content we're going to get is from the outsiders, meaning like Angela, you know, Kieran, they can talk about working together. I feel like nobody else can talk about working together because they're not the main stars of the show. And so because the outsiders are having a hard time getting on the same page, I feel like we're probably not going to get much of it. Even if they do start being more gamey in the actual game, I feel like the edit is not going to show much of it.
Yeah, especially if like one of the good people wins. it's a failing upwards. Stina Nick at Stina Nick's on Twitter. Awesome. What do you both think about production using older/classic BBUS and BBCan comps, like the endurance comp that lasted 6+ hours and pressure cooker and whatnot? How do you feel about the return of classic comps? Also, a lot of the players seem like fans of the old BBUK format that overtly discouraged open gameplay. Do you think this is affecting their strategies and choices?
Yeah, for the second question, 1,000%. I think that's absolutely impacting their you know, game decisions.
Because even on Tim Dormer's like Big Brother Australia season, when he won with Tully, I think that's her name. He was strategic in the best way he could, but there was a rule which was that you can't dump and like discuss who you're nominating and all that. So maybe they're still like that. It's like part of the culture. But if Australian Survivor Season 1 had the mateshipy of it all, and in like the Season 2, the one with, like with Henry, Annalise, Tessa, like all of those people played really hard, like Peter, Jericho, they played super hard in the sequel. I haven't given up on this one yet, but I have hopes that there are enough people here and production is like willing to like listen a bit, that the next one after they tweak the format, the cast will like play hard, you know. They'll be like, no, we don't want to like be like the good people, we're gonna be like Tessa or like AK and like go for like the jugular.
We should hope so. And I don't mind them bringing back classic comps. I think that's fine. I don't have any problem with people. I don't have any problem with them taking the good parts of, you know, Big Brother US. I've enjoyed the competitions that they've done for the most part. Like I said, I liked the ball thing. I liked the water thing. I've been pretty on board with it, and it seems like we're getting different enough results. I think that we could use some mental comps. I think that they need some mental comps.
Something to
level the playing field a little bit. You know, give the Kierans of the world a little bit of a chance to win something.
Like a Jessica Milagros HOH. Where she's like, I'm going to make the cockroaches scatter.
Yeah.
Like, I will make them scatter. I do think that, I do think production is paying attention to North American Big Brother, because the one Ian won, the one at the yarn, it reminded me of the double eviction HOH that Cindy won in Big Brother Canada, what's his name, 5. Like where she had to not the HOH, the veto that Jackie won with like the ropes and like the frame and stuff. And yeah, it's very old, like Big Brother North America, but old school as well. So I'm looking forward to that. We have one more question. This is from @ChrisChristo. Anyone who wins more than 2 challenges is targeted for noms. Is this the whole nobody can have an advantage dynamic, or is this just bad gameplay? So is this like the people being targeted for having 2 HOHs? Is this like a people targeting them for purposeful reasons of that's threatening to my game? Or is it more of a problem of people just like not being good game players and be like, how dare you? Like,
I mean, I think generally, if you've won 2 head of households in 3 eviction cycles or 4 eviction cycles, then you're going to be considered, a powerful player in the game and an easy target, especially in the case of like a 2-sided house where there are 2 main sides. The people who win are the ones whose heads stick out the most when the other side wins, because when it's a 2-sided house, the whole game is who wins the HOHs. And so you want to take out the person who is most likely to win on the other side. And so not only that, but you then you have the additional things of like when you're HOH and you nominate people, that pisses them off. In this game, there are three nominees every time. So you have two people who you pissed off staying in the game. I think the incentive to win HOH in Big Brother Australia is less than the incentive to win in BBUS. And so the fact that you have more opportunity to do it and you can do it twice in a row or twice in three cycles, it's not going to be great for you if you do so.
Especially with no veto, which means that like the HOH is the only comp like that you can solo win. It's more attention. Yes, I guess before we close, who do you think is playing the best, if anyone? This house is interesting.
Honestly, impossible for me to tell. I think that I know who's not playing well. I don't think Casey is playing particularly well. I don't think Dan is playing particularly well, although he seems to have survived well enough. Like, I think he's doing well for who he is. And the fact that he still wasn't targeted when Angela won the second time, I guess, is pretty impressive. But he just doesn't.
And he got his target out.
Truly. And I he doesn't strike me as the kind of player that can win, but this is a different game and it's a different culture. And so I don't know, maybe I'd say Dan is up there. Garth certainly isn't a great player. Hannah seems cool, but not doing much. Ian, Kieran, definitely not. Marissa, she's fierce maybe, but I don't know if she's playing particularly well.
Target, like,
yeah.
You can see it going soon,
so. Matt, the thing too, though, the thing that you have to consider is that I assume they know that the audience votes at the end, right? So being a character, being somebody that the audience wants to vote for, is part of the strategy in this game. And so with that in mind, people like Matt, who's just there, even if he was doing well in the game, I can't say that he's playing well because he'll never win in the end if he gets there.
It's crazy because Matt's been on TV before. He was on a television. Yeah, he's been on Australian TV before. He was on, I think, like the Australian quiz show or something. This is why you have an Australian on this podcast. So he's been on TV, and that time he was quite nice. He wasn't doing this whole "oh, I'm a good person" thing, which is so odd. Like, he knows that, like, how to, like, win over a TV audience.
I think I probably would say some, like, Sophie and Chad. I think that both in terms of, like, staying relatively under the radar in the game, they seem to be floating, they seem to have relationships with both sides, not being actively targeted by anybody, and also, and this is key, in a showmance, which tends to be very popular with the audience. Yeah.
And nobody's like called out their showmance, which is crazy because in the voting confessional, just to go back there, Marissa, who votes against Chad, she says in her voting confessional, I'm going to get the exact quote. Yeah, she says in the voting confessional that he's teamed up with Sophie as a relationship, a showmance inside the house. So I feel like that'll be a double threat to any evictions. So Marissa knows. If Marissa knows that there's like a showmance or a relationship, and that's a 61-year-old, like, you know what I mean? Like, who is not necessarily like spying on every door. I'm pretty sure like a few people must know that at least Chad and Sophie are flirting. Like, they're not even hiding that they're hanging out together. And yet they don't seem to have the same amount of heat as King and Queen, like Dan and Talia did. And I think that's pretty impressive. Like, if you are a pair, that's two votes voting together. Yeah. And people don't seem to mind that you're a pair, it's other than Marissa. So.
All right. Well, that's what we got for you. We're almost at 3 hours now. So lots of content.
Yes, truly.
I guess something about Australian coverage is just long podcasts. But that's what we have for you. Yes, for the second week. We will be back next week.
We have a hashtag. I say Marissa Pizzina. I'm calling it now. Okay. She's at Janelle.
Okay. thank you guys so much for joining us. You can find me on Twitter at Armstrong Taren. I'm on Twitch as well, twitch.tv/Taren Armstrong. Andrew, where can people find you?
Andrew W. Shim at Twitter and Instagram. It's my name. So like Andrew, then the letter W, and then Shim, S-H-I-M.
All right.
Yeah, and Insta and Twitter. DM me.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me. You provided a lot of valuable information and insight, which I very much appreciated. So,
2001 subnets. So I went there.
There you go. All right. Thank you again for joining us, and I will see you next time.